97 WRAF HD1 Detroit.
Now,
this is Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julian will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 248-544-WRIF. That's 248-544-9743. Or text the riff at 4WRIF. That's 4974-3. Night Call is on the air. Here are your hosts, Peter Werby and Julian Jordan.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Hi, Julian. How are you doing?
Hi, Peter. Doing great. How are you?
Beautiful night out there. Actually, someone leaving said it's balmy. Yeah.
It is balmy out there. And you know what? I just read Mickey Rooney died.
Really?
Yeah.
Like 90-something?
93. Just it. Breaking news.
Breaking news. Anyone who doesn't
know who that is, if you're a younger one in the audience, legendary actor.
Yeah. But he started as a kid.
He started as a kid. He sure did. And he did movies with Shirley Temple.
Right.
And, you know.
And almost all of his sentence began with G.
I know.
Like, gee, Mr. Smith.
He was the kid, yeah.
When he was the kid.
Yeah.
Hey, you can give us a ring at 248-544-WRIF.
That's 248-544-9743.
And some people might think, about what? You know, well, this is a phone-in talk show, and we discuss the issues of the day. One of the things that is probably in the magnitude of things happening in the world isn't the strongest thing to begin with, but it's really taken up a lot of people's consciousness here in the Detroit area, and it's made national news as well. There was a truck driver, or a man driving a truck through a Detroit neighborhood. He hit a kid, not his fault, but the kid walked. In fact, I saw the video of it. The kid walked right out in front of the car, you know, without paying attention, and the man got out of the truck, and he was to help the child.
Yeah, because the kid really did just, from whatever all accounts, did just walk out, and he could not avoid him.
And the police said that the driver was blameless, that he had violated no laws. And this mob of about a dozen people, it seems mostly teenagers, set upon the man, beat him badly, stole a lot of his stuff, and the man is now in the hospital with a serious head injuries and an induced coma. And his name is Steve Utash. And what's the element to it? I mean, it'd be bad enough just anybody being set upon by a mob like that, although that's not as infrequent as one might think. The beating victim's name was Steve Utash, and he was from a Detroit suburb, and he was white, and the mob that attacked him was made up of young black males. So this is, I think this is the element that has really powered it, that has brought it to the attention of so many, you know, given it national notoriety. But, you know, can something good come out of something really awful, some just dreadful act by people that have totally lost their humanity and would do that to another human being? Maybe, because it has really mobilized the community.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, just the explosion in the city, throughout the churches that we've seen, today's newspaper coverage, talking about coming together, and it's all over the place, but about it not making it a race issue, about making it a person, a people issue, about uniting, about caring, and having compassion.
And, of course, there's the right wing, there's the conservatives exploiting it in terms of race. Those people are so despicable, because everyone of all races, if you will, have come together around this and just expressed incredible horror at it. All the ministers in Detroit. Well, here, this man, Reverend Larry Simmons of the Baber AME Church in Detroit, was one of the several area clergy who announced on Sunday that they're going to be donating money to help beating victim Steve Utash and his family with his medical bills, which is another thing. I mean, the man doesn't have insurance, so
yeah,
he's...
Well, We haven't talked about, they've raised a lot of money.
Almost
$90,000. Yeah.
Pardon me, $90,000. And the heartwarming thing about this is that the church is in this struggling area and hasn't yet raised money to finish basic repairs from a fire 5 years ago. But Reverend Simmons said it's important for them to show they care for you, Tash.
Yeah.
And so rather than, and you know, when you read the comments underneath these stories, we've talked about this before.
We talked about it a lot.
Yeah, on the comment section of these stories, how this unleashes the most horrible sentiments of people that they can express.
Horrible racism.
Horrible racism. And these are the people that are part of the problem. Certainly the kind of people that would take the law into their own hands like that, punishing. Because what I said, this wasn't unusual. Here is another case. Let me see if I got this here. Yeah. A Detroit man was sentenced today to serve 6 to 15 years in prison, 7 months after he sexually assaulted a 15-year-old girl and then was beaten by vigilantes. So it was the same thing. The parents of the girl who has Down syndrome had asked the judge to sentence the man to a treatment facility for those who suffer from mental illness.
Yeah.
They didn't even think the guy should be sent to prison, and the judge said he wouldn't go for it. But the point being is that this is not that unusual, and this was not any, you know, racial. This other case of the rape didn't have a particular racial aspect.
Right.
Yeah.
And in the other case, the man who's in the hospital that people are raising money for, they have a couple of teenagers in custody as of tonight. And so that's good news.
Yeah. And people and both law enforcement, the community in which the man, Mr. Utash, was attacked, everybody has mobilized on his behalf. So if you can see any silver lining in this horrible incident, it is exactly what you said, and you said that extraordinarily well. I can't even repeat it all, but it was
about care and compassion.
Care, compassion.
And making it not about race, coming together, making it about humanity.
Right. And think about it. I'm just so moved by this, you know, not a big supporter of religion, but this Reverend Simmons. The church does not have enough money to finish basic repairs from a fire 5 years ago, but felt that it was important for them to show that they cared for this victim of this attack.
I think good for them.
Yeah,
that's great.
I think this is incredible.
Yeah.
Comments on it, though. 248-544-WRIF.
I will say, you know, tragic things do happen all the time. I'm not taking away from any of this for this poor man who's lying in the hospital. But things happen all the time that don't get attention.
Yeah.
So is it, I mean, it was horrific. They're horrific acts of violence that happen every day and every night on the streets of Detroit. And I feel like sometimes if it doesn't get the big media television coverage or newspaper coverage, definitely not radio, because we are the only basically liberal talk show in town.
Or, we are now.
You know, so I think a lot of it is driven by the amount of media attention that is given to each individual story. You know, they only have so much time to cover so much. It's like, they're not suffering enough. We don't cover that. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And, you know, you think about around the world, I don't think there's any city like this in the United States, but there are cities across the world where police only go into poor areas in, say, like groups of six. Or here, this in Rio de Janeiro,
about
2,700 members of Brazil's security forces on Saturday occupied a slum complex that sits along two highways connecting Rio's international airport to its main tourist zone. The dawn operation met little resistance and is part of the city's five-year-old pacification policing program, which has established permanent police units in select slums. The permanent patrols are meant to avoid the violence that has resulted from periodic police raids to combat drug trafficking in these slums. And in Luxor, Egypt, which is in the south of Egypt, a feud in southern Egypt between an Arab clan and a Nubian family killed at least 23 people in 2 days of fighting, leaving bodies strewn on the hospital floors and homes burned in its wake. And in many cities in Latin America, certainly in Africa and Asia, this kind of violence is rampant to the point where anything that you see in Detroit, they say, wow, things have gotten so great here now.
Yeah,
by comparison.
Exactly. Crime has gone down.
Yeah.
You guys have it easy in Detroit.
And what unites all of this violence? It's poverty. It's poverty. That's what it is. That is the unfortunate script that comes out of allowing large sectors of populations to live in poverty. People, violence is part of it. I don't know why they always have these big university studies. What causes crime? Why are people violent?
Hello?
You know, and you notice as you go up the class ladder, you know, from the very poor to the working class, to the middle class, and to the upper middle class, and finally to the wealthy, that violence decreases?
Yeah. It sure does.
Economic crimes, of course, increase as you go up.
You know, I grew up in a upper middle class neighborhood, and we didn't see these kind of things. The first time I was exposed to any kind of violence really at all was when I became a television news reporter and covered, I remember the first double murder. I was just this little white suburban girl with my eyes as big as saucers watching the blood stream out of the restaurant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've lived so many times in my life in poor neighborhoods,
yeah,
and seen crime, been victims of crime, tempted to robbery and stuff like that, that it's weird. I almost take it for granted. I'm cautious, and I have a real, what I would call, yeah. I mean, it doesn't always
work.
You go
everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have a street sense, but, you know, you can have a street sense and turn the corner and meet some people you don't want to meet up with, right?
That's right. And it could happen just... It's happened right around the radio station. I hate to say it, but you know,
really?
Through the years, there have been several murders around here.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Just
in the neighborhood.
Well, we're right north of a very poor neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're kind of in the middle of one, really.
Yeah. And that's guaranteed. If you allow a society to have that much differences in income to the point where you have large sections of the population are poor, this is what you get. You get crime, you get murder, you get everything that comes with poverty. And the idea of always trying to reform the poor or stop crime is hopeless. I mean, you can go back 4,000 years and guess what the poor were doing? They were, you know,
fighting for their lives.
Yeah, and they were holding people up with daggers.
Yes. Right.
That would be the funniest thing is that we admire this famous ripoff artist, this stick-up man, this guy that robbed people with threats of violence. You know who I'm talking about?
Well, there's a few I could think of. But
Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah. Well, take from the rich and give to the poor and say, har, 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 har. That's a song.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a song by our friend David Rovix. So it's funny. We're horrified, and this has happened when sometimes people from, say, like West Bloomfield have gone down to the fireworks, which they should be able to go in complete safety, and normally are. Most people are. They don't have any problem. But then get ripped off, and people are horrified. Yet they hear this story about the rich people are going through Sherwood Forest, and they get ripped off, and and plus humiliated. You know, they always like Robin Hood would like cut the guy's belt and his pants would fall down and we go, ha, 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 ha.
That's great.
So I don't know. But here, the idea of walking through the streets of Detroit without a gun is terrifying to some people, but that's the choice they must make if they want to visit downtown venues that don't allow weapons. This is a story in, where the hell is this from? Oh, from the Detroit News. Pardon me. Detroit police warn against leaving guns in vehicles during games and during other events because the issue was raised last week when police officials urged Detroit Tiger fans to keep their guns at home. Isn't there a song, Leave Your Gun at Home, Son? There is some old song.
Is there? I'm not aware of that one.
Anybody want to sing it for us? 248-544-WRIF. keep their guns at home rather than stowing them in their vehicles after the team announced new security measures that require fans to pass through metal detectors before entering Comerica Park. This is where the Detroit Tigers play, if you're not listening in the area. Police fear the guns will be stolen out of cars and end up in the hands of criminals, which has apparently already happened a number of times. Bill Cusick, owner of the Action Impact Gun Range in Southfield and a firearms instructor, said many gun owners may skip going downtown to downtown events if they're not allowed to carry their weapons. Good. Stay home. I mean,
I go down there all the time. I was down there Thursday night for the Jimi Hendrix experience. I wasn't worried.
I think if you probably spent all your time going to bars like in Rochester Hills or Milford or something like that.
True.
Although there are people that are, you know, these gun nuts that wear their concealed weapon when they go to bars there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
remember the guy who that I told you about at Arts, Beats, and Eats?
Oh, yeah.
He pulled his jacket back, and he was just like, oh, yeah. I'm on this corner. Yep, I got a gun. Uh-huh. Like, hey, dude, I'm just going to go get a corn dog. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more worried about him.
I
do go to places, and my friends do. We go to places like down on 3rd Avenue, like by Selden, Honest John's, Jumbo's Bar. I mean, places like that. Every time I walk, I walk into those places, I think, man, you know, most of the people living out in suburbia, they would be terrified walking in here if they had a gun. And let me tell you, I am not among the braver people. In fact, later in the night, I interviewed somebody talking about spending quite a bit of time in Guatemala and where the death squads were after him. And I'm thinking, how did this guy had nerve to go down there? I never would. But I would not go down there if I made an assessment that there was even a low risk of something happening. Is there no risk? No, there is. There is. This is a poor neighborhood. You see somebody pulling up in a late model car, as they call them.
Oh, God.
I could be a potential person to
be, anyone.
Yeah.
Could
anyone
be.
Could. Yeah. But since I've been doing it for a lot of years, and I mean, there are certain things. If I could pull up to the parking lot, and these all these lots now are lit and sometimes even have security guards.
Right.
I mean, I could see a situation where I would say, I'm not getting out of the car.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I can't remember the last time it's happened, but it's happened.
As a woman, I probably wouldn't go alone.
No.
It's different as a woman.
Yeah.
And a little short one at that.
Michigan gun laws prohibit concealed weapons inside gun-free zones that include sport arenas. Police believe some fans have sneaked them into Tigers games anyway. I mean, what kind of nutballs do this? I mean, they're in
this beefed up security so much, there's no way.
I mean, what? I would be, here's what I'd be fearful of, some guy with a gun in Comerica Park. And he would say somebody started getting weirder, acting out
or
all of a sudden.
Fan. What if it was a crazy fan?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And someone from the other team made him mad.
Detroit Police Sergeant Michael Woody, who is in the news all the time now. One gun stolen from a car is one gun that's in the hands of an irresponsible criminal. He said, I don't have the exact number of guns that are stolen from cars parked downtown. But it's enough of an issue that's popped up on our radar, and we feel the need to warn our citizens about this. Whenever I'm anywhere, including in front of my house, including on my drive, and people are, like, visiting and are staying with us,
mm-hmm.
and they say to me, is it okay if I leave this in the car? I said, I could almost guarantee it's okay, but I got to tell you, I would never leave anything in a car.
I don't. Anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I mean, even if I just go into the store and I want to take my credit card in, I don't leave my phone or anything. I mean, you're taking a risk.
Yeah. Let's see if there's other stuff in there. Yeah, there was this guy. Where is this? Oh, yeah. In Clemson, South Carolina, Pete Matsko expected a little pushback when he posted a sarcastic sign banning concealed weapons from Backstreet's Pub and Grill, his beer and burger bar in this college town, but he didn't expect to become a national target. Within weeks, he was slammed with so many online attacks and harassing phone calls that he changed his number and started asking the police to open his mail. Now, these are gun nuts, because how many people have concealed weapons permits or want them? Mm-hmm. Or when they have them, say they're bar owners or something like that, but that people that want to take them into bars or want to take them into sporting arenas, these people make me really nervous. A new concealed weapons law in South Carolina turned his pub into a battlefield in America's culture wars. Like an increasing number of bar and restaurant owners around the country discovered that his politics can matter more than what he serves. In February, South Carolina joined a handful of mostly, guess what, southern states that allow people with permits to take concealed weapons into bars and restaurants. Now, usually when people make laws, they want to address a problem, right?
Yeah.
So what problem?
Or they want to create one.
Yeah, what problem is being addressed here that previously people could not take their guns into bars and restaurants? There are two things they can't do. Armed patrons, oh, man, cannot drink alcohol, and restaurants can opt out by posting a sign. They've got 230,000 such permits. But, I mean, that's just this tiny minority of the population. And these are the major squeaky wheels. You know, talking about the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
In, where is this? Pro and anti-gun forces do not agree on much, but they do agree on the breathtaking sweep of the Georgia legislation, allowing guns in bars, schools, restaurants, churches, and airports that are now awaiting the sign of Governor Nathan Deal. And this 70%, now we always think of Southerners say, yeah, I want everybody to have a gun. Excuse me for
that. There you go again.
Yeah, yeah, well, there is. But the bill was opposed not only by gun control groups, but the state's Police Chiefs Association and Restaurant Association, Episcopal and Catholic churches, the Federal Transportation Security Administration, and a majority of Georgians also opposed it, according to several polls, up to 70% of Georgians. So, but because the capacity of this gun lobby led by the National NRA, which is really just a creature of the gun manufacturers and the ammunition manufacturers, yeah. Just, you know, pimps, whores, which there's a difference. What are they pimps? I don't know. But they get millions and millions of dollars.
I think there's a little of both going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, right. But so 70% of Georgians oppose it, but they are so fearful of these guys. Oh, so leave your guns at home, son. You know?
Please do.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, you know.
Please and thank you.
Yeah. All right, let's take some calls real quickly on this. Let me get these little buttons rolling here. Here is Andrew. Let me see if I got this going here. Andrew, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, sorry, you're on the air. I couldn't tell or not. Go ahead, you're on the air. Welcome.
How's it going, Peter and Jane?
Good.
Good, hi.
How you doing?
Me Tarzan, she Jane.
She's Jane? Oh, man.
No, carry on.
Didn't I call you Jane?
No. I've been called a few things in my life, but not that.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to throw it out there. I work in Detroit.
Yeah.
I work for a plumbing company that works in Detroit for Sears. We install hot water heaters. And I can't lie, there are times that I wish I had a gun. I wish certain things were different about Detroit. But I think people look at Detroit way differently because of what the news puts Detroit as.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been in Detroit, and I feel safer than anything. But I've also been in Detroit, and I feel that I could get hurt.
Well, I got to tell you, when I go out to eat way out in the suburbs, you know, I mean, actually, I don't have high alarms going off when I'm downtown. Certainly when I'm in the downtown entertainment district, even though there is crime there, but it's probably like real late at night. But I'm going into some pretty dicey neighborhoods. You know, when you start going, and I mean, most people probably listening, unless you live in that area, don't even know where Jumbo's and Honest John's is. I mean, John.
I know where it is.
They've been taken over by the hip wazee now, though.
Yeah.
Those bars.
They've been there a long time.
Well, Jumbo's, that's an old bar. That used to just be hookers and criminals and cops and drug dealers and rowdies and toughs. And I never went in there. That was a scary bar. I mean, I'd go in there and go, okay, everybody turned and looked at me. I got to get some out of my car. Yeah, like, forget to stay out. I did that one time.
I'm out of here.
I'm out of here, yeah. Well, I know what you mean.
Now, why don't, if you but sometimes, I, Andrew, sometimes you yeah. say you wish you had a gun, and what stops you from getting one?
Because of the areas that are really, really bad in Detroit. They're just like any other big city in Detroit. or, you know, you're talking St. Louis, any other big city that's outside of Detroit,
yeah.
If you had a gun and you point a gun at somebody, you're going to have 20 guns pointed right back at you.
Well, that could be. You know, I was waiting for someone to say if this Steve Utesh, the man who was beaten by this mob in Detroit, would have had a gun that he would have this wouldn't have happened to him. Possibly. On the other hand, he was such a concerned citizen. As soon as he hit that kid, which was, again, with his car, which was a complete accident, not his fault, as the police have determined, he was hopped out of the car immediately to help the kid, and he was set upon. So, and he was robbed of everything he had in his pockets, in his truck. They could have got his gun as well.
That's true.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's go on to Corey. Corey's in Royal Oak. Corey, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I had a little, you know, thought that resonated a lot with the whole story about, you know, mob mentality, getting the better of people, you know, people overstepping their boundaries, taking the law into their own hands, that kind of thing. Well, I've been in situations where, you know, I see stuff happening. Like, I've sat through fights going on the city bus and stuff like that. And you can't help but have that kind of feeling where you want to get up, you want to get involved, you want to stop it, you want to stop the violence, you want to fix the situation.
That's not a mob. But that's not a mob mentality. That's a good mentality.
True. But I feel like these kids, they saw this thing happen where, you know, kid got hit, and they're like, oh, we got to do something about this. We got to get in there, and we got to fix this problem ourselves. And so, like, when you're in that kind of situation, I can understand getting caught up and making that wrong decision.
Well, yeah,
and how it can really get the better of you.
Sure. And of course, and I know you would agree with this, Corey, that is maybe an explanation, but certainly not an excuse.
Oh, truly not.
And other people apparently, you know, went in there and tried to stop it immediately too. They were horrified that was going on. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Yes, thanks for calling.
Can you hang that up? I can't. Suddenly my here on my screen.
No, this I can't. Just keep it potted down, and we'll figure it out.
All right. Thank you, Corey. Maybe we'll do this. We'll actually go to spots.
Spots mean commercials, by the way.
Oh, yeah, right. We'll go to spots. That doesn't mean like these are appearing on my face.
Did we give our email?
No.
Okay, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Many of you already have it. Thank you for always emailing us at mostly. And, you know, if you're shy, that's the way you can go about getting in contact with us. But don't be shy. Give us a call.
Yeah, actually, speaking of calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and this is in quotes, and I hope this, anything that comes here and does not say, please do not read on the air, I would read on the air. You know what?
I'm just don't say a person's name.
I'm going to change the name, yeah. This is John in Jackson. He says, hi, I'm John in Jackson, a frequent caller to Night Call. Recently, my close friend died from high blood pressure-related disease, so in my sorrow, I got drunk, then drunk-dialed Night Call and expressed the importance of people controlling their blood pressure. Do you remember that? I'm not sure.
Oh, I kind of
yeah,
do,
like,
kind,
just kind
of.
While my intentions were good, I was so drunk that I made a fool out of myself with my drunken incoherence. No disrespect to you or Night Call staff. Well, John, no problem.
You're not the first person who's called in drunk to our show.
What's the
thing? We forgive.
No harm, no penalty.
I think I've even called in drunk to the show. No, just kidding.
All right. Hey, President Obama and the Democrats doing a victory lap over Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Ooh, there's a hot-button issue for you.
If you got comments, 248-544-WRIF.
Thanks for listening to Night Call on 101 The Riff. Peter and Jalee will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night Call. Night Call. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. The weekend brought to you by Planet Fitness. Now through April 10th, join Planet Fitness for just $10 down and $10 a month. Work out on the latest fitness equipment and get unlimited training in their judgment-free zones. Hurry, offer ends April 10th at midnight. The Riff.
Geico presents Strange Saving Stories. Ken Marcus was making a pastrami sandwich when he noticed an odd pattern on a slice of pumpernickel bread. One that spelled out Geico. Ken found himself visiting Geico.com, saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance with great discounts. Later, Ken felt conflicted whether or not he should eat the slice of bread that saved him so much money. But he was so hungry.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Is breakfast really the most important meal of the day? At Buffalo Wild Wings, we think a case can be made for lunch. Think about it. Award-winning hand-spun wings in 16 signature sauces and 5 seasonings, buffalitos, wraps, burgers, and salads. Yeah, we're thinking that's a pretty good argument. Now throw in the fact that we've got over 50 big screens to watch all the sports you'll ever want. It's officially a no-brainer. So next time, make lunch your game-winning meal.
Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit, we're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. This is our second segment. We'd like to welcome you to call in 248-544-WRIF.
That's 248-544-9743.
I wasn't even going to read this because this is exactly what Jalene and I were talking about. Jim writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hello, Peter and Jalene. I can't help but think that if it was a black man who hit a white kid and was beaten by white people, that you would be calling it a terrible racist act of violence. And I wrote back to him. I said, this is all you can think of. I said, you handily flunked the compassion test. You know, one has to.
We're being accused of reverse racism when we just got done going through going through an entire diatribe about coming together and about it not being about color.
You know, and we think, could have this had a racial motivation aspect to it? Very possibly.
We don't know
if it would have taken place in St. Clair Shores or someplace like that, and it would have been like Jim says here, and a white mob would have beaten a black guy. Would we think that there was a racial aspect? Very possibly, but we don't know. And you know what would have happened out in St. Clair Shores and all the adjoining suburbs if that would have happened? The reverse of what happened in Detroit. People are always joining us from around the country. A man was driving through a Detroit neighborhood, a white man in a truck. He hit a kid. It wasn't his fault. The kid stepped out in traffic. And when the driver got out to help the kid, he was set upon by a mob who beat him so badly he's currently in a coma. The whole city's come together, black and white, and this is really discouraging, Jim, I have to tell you, to get messages like this. And you know what would have happened if that would have occurred reverse in St. Clair Shores? The people of St. Clair Shores, the people of the, I can't even think of all the surrounding community, they would have acted just like the people of Detroit. They would have said, hey, this is not typical of us. The churches would have come out and raised money for the black man, just like now black people are raising money for the white man, because they're not even thinking white and black. They are thinking just what Jalene said. This is about humanity. It's about 12 people, apparently, that acted in an inhumane way, that denied their own humanity and I hope that he winds up to be okay, this Steve Utesh, the victim. So, you know, stow it, man. It really, you know.
Stow it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one.
All right. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. It went over the top, over 7 million, and I was watching Bill Maher, and he was saying it was, like everybody waits to the last day. So it's like 3 million people signed up on the last day. And interestingly, the website handled it. They couldn't handle.
They had some glitches that day.
They did
but they fixed them.
They couldn't handle 5,000 people the first day. So, you know, but there's also a companion article, and this was part of the Affordable Care Act as well. Enrollment in Medicaid has increased by 3 million people to a total of 62 million people.
Wow.
Yeah. There are 50 million people on Medicare. So what that's, I can do that math. Okay, can I add on the radio? I know you don't like me to do, like, the long division or something. But that's
never.
Like 112 million people. Then you have 5 million people a year that are using the VA hospital, right?
Okay.
The Veterans Administration hospitals. And another number on Social Security disability that I didn't probably look hard enough to find.
So it makes these numbers look really, really small.
Well, also, you got half of the population that's getting government either subsidized or direct government care.
It further makes one wonder, why all the fuss? Why all why dost thou protest?
Yeah. Medicaid expansion is one of the two main policies that President Obama and congressional Democrats chose in extending health care coverage to more Americans. The White House reported this week that 7.1 million people had signed up through another channel, private health plans sold in these new insurance marketplaces. And you would think this is over. For one thing, the Republicans have stopped talking about repealing Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. But the idea that there's 62 million people that qualify for Medicaid gives more credence to the idea that we're increasingly becoming a nation of very wealthy people and very poor people. Because Medicaid is...
Speaking of Guatemala.
Yeah, speaking... Yeah, I used to say that. We're
Guatemala up effect.
With this... You know, I haven't thought about that in a long time. We're winding up with the same class structure with the divergence between the people that are have enough income to live what we consider to be an adequate life and those that don't.
It's the haves and the have-nots at that point.
I mean, we have a major struggle on our hands for people to get $1.10 an hour. Which comes up to the grand total of something like $21,000 a year. And if you're in, and some of you are listening and you're thinking, man, if I made $21,000 a year, I would be so happy. On the other hand, those of you who are listening who's either are in a family, if you're, you know, like a young person, or if you're, you know, the wage earner, and you're making $50,000, $60,000, $75,000 a year, and you have a partner that's making around the same thing, or say another $30,000. So you have a family income of $100,000. Can you imagine raising a family on $21,000 a year?
Yeah, think about that one for a second.
Yeah, I mean that isn't that probably what they're paying for tuition and room and board if you're sending somebody to the University of Michigan or something like that. So what this really indicates is how many poor people there are. And if you're going to have that many poor people, if people are going to sit still for this incredible divergence in wealth and this obscene wealth that's parked at the top and getting bigger all the time, the least you can do is, I would say, is to care for people on the bottom. Right.
Yes.
And also not make it a disgrace to be on the bottom. The reason that there's such a huge bottom is because there's so much money in this little teeny bit of the top.
How anyone doesn't have compassion for people who suffer and you know struggle so hard to get by and to put food on the table to feed their children, it's heartless.
It is. It is indeed. And let's see. Oh, yeah. Now, this Representative Paul Ryan, you may remember him. He was the running mate of Richie Rich Kid Romney. What's his first name? Biff.
Mitt.
I know he
not
had one
George.
Of, no, not George, but I knew he had something like Biff or, you know, they all got.
Did you? You didn't forget.
They all got names.
I
like
know.
That.
They had their little, Yale, Harvard,
gross pointy
frat
names.
Boy names.
And hey, some of my best friends, one does live in Grosse Pointe. Two, actually two. But, you know, they have areas in Grosse Pointe that are small homes and.
Yeah, you
know,
well, it's, you can go across the street and it's a whole other story.
It is. So, Representative Paul Ryan, he just released the new Republican budget, and he may run for the White House. He laid out a budget plan that cuts $5 trillion in spending over the next decade. And so what are they taking it off of the unnecessary so-called defense? They're going to increase defense spending, war spending. But so where's it going to come from?
You and me.
Medicaid, those 62 million people that need government help in order to have decent medical care. And where else? Oh, food stamps, because those poor people that don't have the jobs. Okay. And the total repeal of the Affordable Care Act, just as millions are reaping the benefits of the law. He says, we need to be a proposition party, not just an opposition party. Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Ryan, I got a proposition for you, and it has to do with the toe of my boot.
I could think of something much more mean, but I won't.
Yeah.
I'll hold it to myself.
Yeah. Now, I don't skip much meaner than until you can put a boot up some person's butt.
Yeah, that's pretty bad,
yeah,
I guess.
That's pretty bad. Everybody would say, liberals, Jalene Peter, they just want that Obamacare and all that. Well, at 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Pardon me, I'm going to be interviewing Margaret Flowers, M.D. She's a pediatrician in Baltimore. And she is refusing to buy medical insurance either through the Affordable Care Act or through private insurance. She said she will not, as a health practitioner, she will not fund these private insurance corporations. She's an outspoken advocate for a Medicare for All health system. In other words, a full government health plan like they have in other countries. Let's see. She said,
but I'm not living without health insurance. I'll tell you that.
No, well,
I did for 7 years. That was scary.
Don't you think though that if she's a doctor, if she got sick, she might have some buddies.
Yeah, who might take care of her.
Yeah. But she says focusing solely on the number of people who are insured is what the private health insurance industry wants the public to believe is the most important. The industry spent tremendous amounts of money and time to get a law that would force people to buy insurance in order to protect and enhance their assets. They want everybody to buy their products and to make people feel reckless or irresponsible if they don't. This is a massive campaign to distract people from asking the questions that really matter, such as whether people with insurance will be able to afford health care, whether bankruptcies from medical debt will continue, and whether overall health outcomes will improve. And she's not optimistic about any of this. Now, I said to her in this, I said, look, the right-wingers, the teabaggers, the conservatives, all the people that couldn't give a poop about poor people or whether they have access to health care, whether that makes them go bankrupt or anything like that, are fearful that the Affordable Care Act is just, speaking about the boot, just to kind of getting your toe in the door. Right? It's the
To get more.
The thin wedge. It's what the socialists and the Democratic Party are. It's their first salvo to eventually get Medicare for All, full socialized medicine. And actually, I don't think she agreed with me. I mean, I would hope it's true because this is an insane system. We've talked to a young colleague here who was trying to go through the thickets of the Affordable Care Act. And also, a lot of this just winds up to be them paying for catastrophic insurance. Some of the deductibles are up in the thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean, that's not unusual. I mean, I know people that have company insurance that where there's like a $4,000 deductible. So, in other words, you have to.
That's a lot.
Just going to doctors and something like slipping on the dance floor or something like that and getting a bad cut or breaking a bone on your bicycle or motorcycle, you're going to wind up with $800 and you're going to be paying it yourself. So,
broke my finger and didn't have health insurance and I just left it. Have you seen my finger?
Wow. Yeah.
That's what some people do. They just live with it.
Yeah.
But now I have health insurance, but it's too late because it's set and it's crooked.
So
if you're ever looking for me, I'm the girl with the crooked finger.
There you go. What to say?
I know.
Ronald wrote into calltechyes@yahoo.com. We were talking earlier about people, particularly people from the suburbs that don't have any experience in Detroit and see it as a very scary place. I don't know how much you watch the local news, but they do a lot of Detroit crime stuff. So it looks totally like a scary place. And you know, I know people. I have a relative that will not go south of 8 Mile Road, which is the northern border of Detroit, if you're listening from out of town, which is insane.
There's so much down there. There's so much south of 8 Mile.
Yeah, that's the only place I go.
And when I go downtown, I take Livernois all the way down.
Do you?
By myself.
That's a street, folks.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, afraid.
And I'm not afraid.
No.
I'm not afraid.
Well, Ronald writes, hey, guys, great show. About being afraid in Detroit. I love Detroit and downtown, the good things and the bad. I have to say, honestly, I would be more afraid of the deep south than most places in Detroit. That's probably, you know.
Well, it depends on what area, and it does depend on, I mean, me as a woman, there are states I wouldn't want to live in because of their woman-hating and trying to take away my rights.
Yeah.
As an African American,
You're an African American?
Didn't you know?
You're passing, girl.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
There's some scary, scary racism going on in certain areas. Not the entire South, but certain areas.
I'm thinking about going south.
Yeah, where are you going?
Well, Mississippi.
No.
I've never been there, and I've always been nervous because I always thought, you know, they would, you know, they'd say, hey, long hair. And that's in a song, isn't it, somewhere?
I don't know, Peter.
Somebody email us, hey, long hair, get out of the car, or something like that. Talkyes@yahoo.com if you can remember where that is. But any event, they're...
Sounds like something from the 60s.
Yeah, half a century ago, in 1964, there was what they called Mississippi Summer, when all these people, as they said, went south, white and black, to help these people that were under the control of these right-wing conservatives, that happened to be Democrats at the time, that weren't allowing black people to vote. So they went there to vote. There was these, the domestic terrorists that killed people, lynched people that were trying to vote, shot people down in cold blood, murdered those three civil rights workers.
Yeah.
And now they're having a celebration in Jackson, or a commemoration in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh.
So I was thinking about heading down to that. I've never been in Mississippi. I've never been to New Orleans, so I was thinking about going
there. I'd love to hear your take on Mississippi.
Well,
head on down there.
And then they have a civil rights museum now, and I didn't bring that article.
Birmingham.
Well, they do, but they also have it in this little small town where...
In Mississippi.
Yeah.
And
they have, like, the rifle I don't have the article with it, assassinated, was it Medgar Evers? I can't remember, but he was assassinated. And there was a white woman from Detroit, whose last name was Luizzo, who was assassinated, too, by these white terrorists.
Wow.
So I may go down there.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's take some calls.
Good.
The number, 248-544-WRIF. Here is Pauline. Pauline's in Warren. Hi, Pauline. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just want you to pontificate a little bit.
I am the pontiff.
Pauline.
Just so you know, Jolene and I are kind of friends.
We're kind of friends. Yeah, we're cool. We are. She's been to my house
and
everything.
I want you to go on about McCutcheon versus the Supreme Court.
McCutcheon, now there's a Southern boy. He was, too. Where he's from, Georgia or something like that. Yeah, the Supreme Court on Wednesday it's trying increasingly to get rid of the limits on election spending, and they struck another blow. There was this cap that went back decades on the total amount that an individual can contribute to federal candidates during a two-year election cycle. So now someone like the Sheldon Adelson, who's the eighth richest man in the world, who spends tens of millions of dollars, like the Koch brothers, now they can just inject millions and millions and millions of dollars more on behalf of their similarly rich friends. And, of course, get these dupes, these teabaggers and all that, who they finance. It wouldn't even be a teabagger movement if it wasn't for these rich guys. But 5-4, the court's conservative members echoing this other decision, Citizens United, that struck down limits on independent campaign spending by corporations and unions. Now, there is this attempt equivalency, that, you got the corporations on one side giving money, and you got unions on the other. Well, here is just the Koch brothers, and this is in the March 31st of this year, Nation Magazine. You go to thenation.org, and it is the political spending in the 2012 election. Yeah. Political spending by the 10 biggest unions in the 2012 election, $153 million. And that all came from union members, just from individuals, you know, their dues. Political spending by the Koch brothers-backed groups in the 2012 election, and those are, you know, like I say, the two brothers that are worth, could be up to $100 billion.
Jeez.
They spent $412 million. So they almost spent $500 million trying to get people in who will not put limits on the right of their companies to pollute the world. Okay. Pauline, how did I do?
You did quite well. I would summarize it as an attempt to bastardize democracy.
Not me, but the Koch brothers and the Sheldon Adelsons and what have you, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Not you, Peter.
I know. Well, I just, you know, sometimes you confuse things like that. All right, Pauline, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk. I rarely get it.
Thank you for answering my question, demand, whatever.
All right, Pauline, you have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye, girl.
Bye. Thanks for calling us at 248-544-WRIF.
She's a funny one.
She is, and there is open lines. And
there are open lines.
Yeah, yes, there is.
Get it together.
Paul called in to say that Signs, oh, yeah, wait a minute. Actually, that song by Signs by the Five-man electrical band.
Yes, I played it yesterday.
Yeah. They have a thing. That they don't have the, you know, get out of the van, long hair, get out of the car, long hair. But they have a thing where there's
it
a
sign. References long hair.
Yeah, so he puts it up under his cap and something like that. Yeah. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Here is Marge. Marge is in Mount Clemens. Marge, hi, you're on the air. Hey, Marge.
Whoa.
What?
Oh, no. Remember this?
No. Marge?
That's my mom's name.
Marge.
Mom?
Marge.
Mom, are you there?
Here.
Hey, Marge, what's up? Were you out having a ciggy?
Marge is gone. We've gone through this before with Marge.
Marge?
Mom, I wish you'd quit calling my show. She's never once, in 17 years, she's never listened to me in here.
She has a cigarette voice. Call back, Marge. We want to hear from you. And we also hear other people who have opinions about Obamacare. And you know, when they say that Obamacare remains unpopular among the majority of American people, one of the things they don't count on is where is the criticism coming from? Is it coming from the right or is it coming from the left?
Or,
in fact,
the
center?
Teabaggers.
Oh, well, that's what I mean. So we are critical.
Or the center.
Yeah. Jalene and I are critical of Obamacare because it is not socialized medicine.
It doesn't
enough.
Go far enough.
It doesn't go far enough. That's our problem with it. And that would be everybody I know and everybody I interact with. So that when you see that it's unpopular, it just doesn't mean that people don't want anyone to have medical care. It means we should be like grandma and grandpa. You don't have to be struggling all the time. We shouldn't. I mean, it is so heartfelt that the people of Detroit and the people of the suburbs have gotten together to raise money from this poor man that was attacked by this mob in Detroit, and they've got almost $90,000. But that's good that they do it. But on the other hand, why does, you know, if they didn't do it, he would be $90,000 in debt, which is, you know, just a horrible thing. Wait a minute.
Hey, Peter Martin wrote in and said, your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. Is that it?
And that is by, I remember.
Where do you go?
Yeah, I remember. Oh, by Loggins, no, not by Loggins.
No. Oh, they did it, but I think someone else did it.
Yeah. It's probably like saying Glenn Miller to a lot of people. All right, let's try. Hey, Marge, can you do a little better this time? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Can you do a little better this time?
There you are.
Yeah, go ahead, Marge. What's up?
I had playing the first time. You guys weren't listening.
Yeah. No, we didn't. You weren't coming through. We were having connection issues.
I know, but now I'm through and...
Okay, what's up? Marge.
Give us the highlights.
Well, I'm on the air now. Yeah. So all I was saying before was that this Obamacare is supposed to take care of everyone and take care of them. Don't ask us to pay more than we can afford.
No, that's absolutely true.
There you go.
And you know what? I actually agree with you considerably.
I'm glad we got to that point.
Yeah, because Marge, there are a lot of young people that, for any number of reasons, either who just want insurance or feel that they have a civic duty or that it's the law. But and even with a lot of stipends, you wind up paying $130 a month. A lot of people cannot afford that. That is
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They're barely making it as it is, paycheck to paycheck.
A lot of people go out and go, hey, I need a bottle of wine for dinner. Well, how much is that? $130? Okay, I'll have three of those.
Oh, God.
You know. On the other hand, other people are having to make pretty uncomfortable decisions about what they're going to spend $130 on. And they're not getting enough for it. If you paid $130 and that was it, you didn't have to pay any copays, you didn't have any deductibles.
Prescriptions.
Thank you. Yeah, prescriptions, that would be wonderful. But the fact that this really winds up to be limited insurance, and here's what needs to be done. Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, does not need to be repealed. It needs to be extended. It needs to get the insurance agents, people that are making a fortune off of ensuring that we don't go bankrupt or that we wind up with no medical care. Marge, thank you. Very, very well said.
Yes.
Appreciate it. All right.
I'm glad we could connect.
Yeah. Your thoughts about Obamacare?
Sorry to call
else?
You mom. That's just my mom's name.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's nice. That's nice. All right. We'll be right back.
Make your opinion heard. Call us at our new number, 248-544-WRIF. Peter and Jalene will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night Call. Geico presents Strange Savings Stories. Ken Marcus was making a pastrami sandwich when he noticed an odd pattern on a slice of pumpernickel bread, one that spelled out Geico. Ken found himself visiting Geico.com, saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance with great discounts. Later, Ken felt conflicted whether or not he should eat the slice of bread that saved him so much money. But he was so hungry.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
If you've got 15 seconds, Geico could help you be a better driver.
In the average city, drivers run red lights 120,000 times a day. There are two basic types of red light runners. There's the daydreamer, and there's the accelerator who speeds up on the yellow. Are we really in that much of a hurry? The typical speed through an intersection is over 50 miles per hour. Be careful around intersections. If you get a yellow light, stop. If you have the green light, watch for the red light runner.
Manage your policy, get roadside assistance, and more. Just a tap away on Geico's free mobile app.
If you're sick of IT issues, or if your IT support is causing major disruptions in your business, then it's time to call the experts at Expatech Technology Services. Locally owned and operated in Troy, Expatech Technology Services have been serving Metro Detroit for over 18 years. Expatech offers fast, reliable computer support for small to medium-sized businesses. You don't have the time to be sweating over networking or IT concerns. Expatech can support your IT needs 24/7, 365 days a year. At Expatech, they're focused on keeping your network up and running so that you can focus on your business. Expatech offers a variety of options to fit any company's budgets and needs. For more info or to request a free assessment, go to expatechrochester.com now. That's E-X-P-E-T-E-C Rochester.com or call 248-218-5018. Prevent IT disasters and let the experts at Expatech Technologies help you.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Voting has begun in the 2014 Riff Rock Girl Search.
Get more details online at WRIF.com.
Peter and Jalene, you're listening to Night Call.
Of course I'm ready.
The award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
Been ready. Stay ready.
That's right.
248-544-WRIF, which is 2.
248-544-9743.
I forgot these other things, too. PeterWerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. Always good stuff on there. How modest. And our Facebook page, which, of course, has eclipsed probably my website, don't you think, in this 21st century?
Yeah. I kind of go in and out, but we have added a lot of fans. I actually want to apologize for not being as present as I should be on that.
Okay. Facebook.com/nightcall, and we like, so join us. Yes, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And you will see, if you go to peterwerby.com, tonight's guests are Dr. Margaret Flowers, who I quoted earlier, a pediatrician, co-director of something called itsoureconomy.com. She's critical of the Affordable Care Act, which she says will not improve health care or coverage. I'm not 100% sure she's right, but I wanted to get her on. This is a critic from the left, not from the right. And also, novelist Mike Bond joins me again. He was just on a few weeks ago, his novel about Africa. What was it called? Savannah, I think. And he's written something called The House of Jaguars, set in Guatemala during the worst years of the death squads. And he was down there as a human rights reporter. It's really frightening. And tells the story of U.S. complicity, which echoes the author's own experiences that when he was reported there during the 1980s. And I want to get back to our calls. Let me see. I got to go to another screen here. So, Robert and Ron, hold on just a second, because you know I'm doing exactly what I'm fearful almost all the rest of us are, and that's ignoring what is happening with climate change. And we've heard this now.
Oh, we don't somewhat. Ignore it. Are you kidding me?
Well, this the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just released another report that. That said, our ass is grass, and climate is the lawnmower unless we start doing something tomorrow. Now, this you know, it sounds like Cassandra, and Cassandra was mythological figure who had the gift of prophecy, but the curse of not being believed. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And this article says climate change already has sweeping effects on every continent throughout the world's oceans, and they warned that the problem was likely to grow substantially worse unless greenhouse emissions are brought under control. I saw Captain Paul Watson, the founder of Sea Shepherds. He's on Whale Wars, if you watch the Animal Planet network, cable network.
He's the Captain Paul.
He's the Captain Paul, and it was pretty frightening because you just hope he's not. He can't be right. He said by 2048, the seas are going to be dead. There's going to be nothing in there except jellyfish.
That's not very far.
He says the seas die, we die.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it is so frightening, that, and people, I'm sure, feel so powerless that I don't even think that we can address it. But they're talking about. They summarized climate sciences and concluded that because of man-made pollution and everything that's just, you know, putting more and more gases into the atmosphere, the ice caps are melting, sea ice in the Arctic is collapsing, water supplies are coming under stress, heat waves and heavy rains are intensifying, coral reefs are dying, and fish and many other creatures are migrating towards the poles or in some cases going extinct. Because there's going to be this dead zone, both because of including agriculture in the midsection of the planet, and there's billions of poor people. And I don't know, did you where was it in? Was it in The Day After Tomorrow or World War Z?
I haven't watched either. I can't watch movies.
Yeah,
well,
The Day After Tomorrow is so frightening and is another Cassandra piece. Mm-hmm. That people, because of this ice age, are trying to, the Americans are trying to get into Mexico, except the Mexicans don't want tens of millions of Americans coming into their country.
Wow, that sounds
vaguely familiar. So they start shooting people
familiar.
That are trying to get into Mexico, yeah. But organic matter frozen in Arctic soils since before civilization began is now melting, allowing it to decay into greenhouse gases that will cause future further warming. The world's food supply is at risk. The report is the final work of several hundred authors. So now who are we going to believe in all of this? These crazed
politicians,
tea baggers.
Yeah. Corporations.
I don't even understand exactly why climate denial is almost exclusively a right-wing thing. I mean, what?
Well, what is it kind of goes along with everything else. I hate to
say they're wrong on everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it does. But this is about, could be the survival of our species on the planet. Because, you know, when you start overshooting your carrying capacity, even if you're not familiar with those terms, that makes sense. In other words, that every ecosphere, every little, you know, biosphere has a capacity to feed and reproduce a certain number of plants and animals,
yes.
Right? If you overshoot that, something's got to die.
Right.
And there's been...
one species dies, and that causes another species to die, which causes another species to die.
You know, the dodo bird, which went extinct in the 1830s, they digested the seeds from this one tree species and then pooped it out and spread it, and it was the only way it could reproduce itself. So these trees lasted another 75 years, and by the 1890s, all the trees were extinct of this particular...
Wow.
Yeah. And the other thing is, things like the passenger pigeon, which had billions in the United States and were shot for fun, were shot for food.
Yeah.
And they were so prevalent that somehow they would block out the sun. And their stock started getting, you know, you couldn't kill billions of them, obviously, but they just crashed. It just like one, you know, they were being slowly reduced and something just like fell off a cliff. And could that happen to us? I don't know. You know, that's, again, is that Chicken Little? The sky is falling?
I don't think so. I'd rather err on the side of caution, as we usually like to say.
Yeah. The scientists emphasize that climate change is not just a problem of the distant future, but that it's happening now. And this goes on and on. Mountain snowpack declining, threatening water supplies for the region. There are places like in Peru, and is Peru landlocked? Is that the country I'm thinking of? Their glaciers have melted almost completely, and that's the only place to get their water from. You know, water runoff.
All I know about Peru is that George Bush snorted half of their cocaine supply.
Speaking of George Bush, now wait a minute. If anybody is going to be active in things, well, Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherds, why are we forgetting that there was this little, or did we say that earlier in the show?
No, we didn't.
That the International Court of Justice held that Japan could no longer hunt whales in the South Pacific.
Right.
Not the South, what is it called? The
Southern Ocean.
The Southern
Japan's
Ocean.
Southern Ocean.
Yeah. I don't even have that here. Do you got it?
I do, but it is so, here, Peter.
I can read it.
This is getting sad when you can read something and I can't because the type's too small. Am I catching up with you?
You are. In a stunning victory for the whales, the International Court of Justice in The Hague, that's in Holland, announced their binding decision today in a landmark case of Australia versus Japan, ruling that Japan's whaling program in the Antarctic is not for scientific purposes.
Which is what their excuse has been all along. But it's not. It's a delicacy. They use it for whale bacon.
Yeah.
And
sushi.
Sushi, and it's just a way of making money.
So I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the Sea Shepherds, they interfere and attack.
Yeah, if you've seen Whale Wars, you've seen it up.
These whaling vessels.
I mean, they actually do all kinds of things to stop them. And remember, they threw that kind of a rancid-smelling oil or
something?
The
Sea Shepherds use these stink bombs.
Stink bombs, and they throw them onto the whaling ships.
Yeah, and the whaling ships put these, because they're enormous, these ships. They're big factory ships. And they put these fire hoses on them, and, it's quite amazing. But they used to say, and this still holds, this hasn't changed, it's not like the cause of the day or whatever, cause du jour, if you will. They used to say about the anti-nuclear power movement, better active today than radioactive tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that still holds. And we may be, I'll tell you, on one hand, it doesn't seem conceivable to me that this would actually wind up to be one of these catastrophe movies. But on the other hand, it could happen. And what I always say, isn't it better to err on the side of caution? But when you have, at best, these tepid controls put on by the government and all these righties, including the Koch brothers, K-O-C-H, in case you're not familiar with them, and the Republicans are addicted to Coke. That's the new slogan. Who's provided like half a billion dollars to Republican candidates who would like to take all the regulations off of most industrial concerns because they want the free market.
Skewing legislation.
Yeah. Free market means no controls on pollution, no controls on Wall Street, and you get $2.75 an hour. Anyway, remember, I've always been corrected about that. Turns out that George Bush, besides being a war criminal, lying about Iraq and being involved in all these financial shenanigans with his pals, he's a painter, right?
He's, yeah. And we're not talking about, like, painting a house. He's an artist.
Yeah, and he's done all these portraits of world leaders, and people are, I've heard everybody say, those were so terrible. And I've had other people that are kind of knowledgeable in art saying, those aren't bad. But wasn't there another leader that was a painter, too? What was his name? Schicklgruber. What did he, but he had a different name.
Huh?
Hitler. Not that there's anything, there's no comparison.
No
comparison.
We wouldn't do that.
Yeah, he wouldn't. But,
you know, there's something very soothing about painting. He's got to escape all the evil that he's done by escaping somehow, and it can't be alcohol anymore.
He said, he told his painting instructor, there's a Rembrandt trapped in this body. Your job is to unleash him.
Oh, he's so full of himself.
You think? but he had read, where did I see this in here? He had read Winston Churchill's book on painting and decided he would do that. I can't just find it here. But anyway, the enemy du jour, the enemy of the day, Vladimir Putin, yeah, they were buddies, right? Remember that Bush said, I saw into his soul.
God.
Yeah, and so...
It's hard to see into one's soul when you have none.
Well, he's done portraits of 24 current and former world leaders, and he was on NBC's Today Show on Friday, and he told his daughter, and who's Today contributor Jenna Bush Hager, about an uncomfortable encounter he had with the Russian president. He said that...
I like how you talk. He's speaking as him. Go ahead.
As you know, our dear dog Barney, who had a special place in my heart, Putin dissed him. That's what Bush said.
He dissed him. See, he's still just so...
He said, Putin dissed him.
Dumb.
And Putin said, you call that a dog?
That's pretty funny. He never forgot that, did he?
That's what Putin said.
He probably wanted to, like, go bomb someone for dissing Barney.
And Bush recalled, a year later, your mom and I go to visit, and Vladimir says, would you like to meet my dog? Don't start me, please. Our outbounds his huge hound, obviously much bigger than a Scottish Terrier, and Putin looks at me and says, bigger, stronger, and faster than Barney.
That's funny.
Yeah. I just took it in. I didn't react. I said, wow, anybody who thinks my dog is bigger than your dog is an interesting character, and that painting kind of reflects that. Then later, he's talking about that they haven't seen all his portraits. I think they're going to say, wow. What is all of a sudden? He starts every sentence with, wow. This is George W.
That's
Bush.
That's all he has.
Yeah.
He was the leader of our nation.
You know, everybody brings out the old presidents, like Clinton and Carter is everywhere now. Again, he's written a new book in the 90s.
He's got to be.
I think so. They do not bring out George W. Bush.
No.
He's done a few paintings.
You stay in that little room and paint some.
Putin says, you call that a dog?
Oh, God. Doesn't it just seem like the good old boys club kind of thing?
Right.
Yuck.
Okay, here's another comment. We were talking earlier, in case you're just joining us, didn't hear all this, but even nationally, this case in Detroit, where this man was driving through Detroit and hit a child, broke his leg. He jumped out of his truck. He was set upon by this mob and severely beaten. The victim remains in a coma. Two arrests have been made. The whole city came together, black and white, and with their hearts out to this man, praying for him in the case of many churches, collecting even these poor churches in Detroit, been raising money. So you got another comment on that, though. And you can call in about that or Obamacare. Want to talk about that as well. 248-544-WRIF. Here is Paul. Paul, where are you? Malcolm, is it?
No, Macomb County.
Oh, Macomb County. Oh, okay. Go ahead. You're on the air.
It's just like the, you know, Dennis Rodney case in, when O.J. was convicted. They pulled a guy quickly out of the truck. It's a white race that was at Florence and we're at in East what, L.A.
What's your point, though? I don't get it. What do you mean it was just
well,
like it?
There were, people were in a hurry to beat that white guy up in Harbor Woods for the man that hit the 10-year-old boy. Innocent victim, two innocent victims.
Yeah.
Why do you think they did that?
They're in a hurry just to give judgment to a person.
Well, good. I'm glad you didn't put the adjective white, because we don't know what their motivation was. Because there's been, it often happens in poor neighborhoods. Poor neighborhoods, for instance, in South Africa, where people that, you know, do stuff like that, they'd put a burning tire around someone's neck. So it's very, throughout the world, we were talking about that earlier, Paul, that in poor neighborhoods are always rift with violence. And again, that's not an excuse in the slightest. I mean, these people have denied, the people that were in that mob denied their own humanity and hurt, as you accurately said, an innocent person. And really, you would think, since this was an accident, that it could have gone another way, that people would have seen that this Steve Utash, the man that was beaten so badly, jumped out of the car. He would have thought, uh-oh, this is a neighborhood, this is a poor neighborhood, mm-hmm. I should just put it in first gear and get back to, where was it, Clinton Township or someplace like that, and, you know, and maybe call the police later. But we know that the Steve Utash had high humanity, and we know that people from all over Detroit, black and white, have joined together to express their humanity as well, don't you think?
Well, okay. No, there's worse humanitarian things like that goes on throughout the world, but
yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's totally wrong that, you know, it's almost similar to O.J. Simpson.
Well, you're just kind of stuck.
I don't know.
On
I think there's just many more examples that you could use, but I think what you're trying to get at is it's just a very violent
yeah.
culture,
yeah.
and that there are violent cultures throughout the world.
Yeah, and that was like 20 yeah. years ago, so don't get stuck on that, Paul. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is our buddy Ron from Shelby Township. Ron, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, Peter, Julie, how you been?
Hi, how you
Great.
Doing?
Great, hi, Ron.
I missed the show last week. Time just got away from me.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, I just want to comment on Obamacare. Peter, you know that guest that you said you were going to have on at 1 a.m., is it?
Yeah.
Is it a she?
It is a she, yeah. Dr. Margaret Flowers,
A doctor?
She is, a pediatrician.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble on this, but she's right.
But
she
what?
Is right, Peter. You have no idea what I know about Obamacare. Okay?
I don't know what you know.
How do you know more than anyone
doctors,
else?
There are a lot of doctors that are just simply closing their doors because of Obamacare. And I wanted to make a suggestion to you. You need to get Chris Ann Hall on your show. I wish you'd get Chris Ann Hall on your show and clear this whole Obama thing up.
Well, why don't you give a listen to this Dr. Margaret Flowers at 1 a.m., and we can give a listen there.
Yeah, I'm going to listen.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But there are so many things about Obamacare that are just simply unconstitutional,
well,
Peter.
Then what's constitutional, unfortunately, is determined by the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court just made another decision that I think was awful and not consistent with my view of what is constitutional, but you know what?
And that was about
financing
of campaigns.
All three branches of our government are in cahoots with one another. This our government, our federal government, is so criminal, it's not funny. I think we've just had it, that's all. I mean, the American people have been had.
Well, I think in
a lot of ways we have been had.
Yeah, in a lot of ways we agree. You know, you give a listen to that. I said, I don't think it's adequate. But here's the deal, that things that are wrong can be fixed. That's it. I don't know that there's an inherent flaw. But let me, I want to go on to something else, Ron.
The inherent flaw is that it doesn't go far enough.
Exactly.
That's it.
All right, Ron, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron.
You know what? You know what? You know, I thought I had sent that to you. Maybe that didn't come across. And I don't know if I can get to my email fast enough. There is this national talk show, one of these shock jock shows, Obi and Anthony. Did
oh,
you
yeah.
see that? Did I send that to you?
You did, and I did. I thought I
know where it is. It's in the hopper of the printer over there. Obi and Anthony, these millionaire radio talk show hosts, are saying that they're, and I kind of wish I could.
I can find it, Peter.
Okay.
Just keep talking.
Well, everything's deleted from your.
I can find it anyway.
You can go in the trash.
I can find it.
Okay. All right. So Obi and Anthony are saying they don't know why there's not a revolution in the United States over Obamacare.
Oh, look how quickly I found that.
Okay.
Amazing.
Well, go ahead.
Such a good co-host. Here we go. Let me get back to the top of it now. This computer, I tell you. And I have such bad luck with computers at this place.
You do.
Here we go. The host of It's a Serious XM, Opie and Anthony's show, slammed Obamacare for losing their health insurance due to the health care law.
Wait, they lost their insurance?
That's what it says.
They make enough money they could buy a hospital.
Yeah. One of them has a wife and two kids, went into detail. I don't want to say their name anymore. Has a wife and two kids, went into detail Thursday about receiving an insurance cancellation in the mail. I'm a little annoyed today because I got my insurance cancellations yesterday, and I got kids and the wife. I got kids and the wife that need all that stuff, that needed all that stuff. Well, he's eloquent. He went on to say that he had no issue with his canceled health insurance, and he doesn't even know where to begin. What's that mean? I have no idea how to even attempt this. I don't even know where to begin. You call a damn insurance company, you idiot. They make money.
Millions.
They make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they can just call, just give old State Farm.
But wait,
call Jake from State Farm and have it taken care of. He described he had perfect health insurance for himself and his family before it got taken away. Finally, after all these years, I had perfect health insurance, and now I have to redo the whole thing. Oh, I feel bad for you, rich white guy problems.
Now, wait a minute. There's something wrong here because the policies that have been canceled were so inadequate that they didn't meet
That's
the standard.
Why.
So why wouldn't a guy who's a millionaire have the gold standard Cadillac of health insurance
plan.
Yes.
It's all because they want to hate it.
Yeah.
And so when that happens,
he does want to hate it. They're these right wingers. How in the world rock and roll people, like, and particularly morning hosts, want it to be rock and roll is worthy of a whole show. But
they've been at it a long time, Peter.
Who? Those two?
Yes.
Yeah, they have. But doesn't SiriusXM offer employees? Maybe they offer so bad.
I don't know how that works, honestly. I don't know if they're contracted.
If you have a wife and kids, you can buy a policy for yourself. Say, I don't know, that you would pay no co-pays for anything if your premiums are high enough. And they make enough. That's why it doesn't
make so much money. That's just a blip on the scale.
Yeah, so why would they have health insurance that was so, why would he have so health insurance that's so inadequate that Obama, under the Affordable Care Act, that it would get canceled?
He doesn't understand it.
Or the other thing is, one thing we found that almost all these horror stories have turned out to be not true.
Oh, that a lot of them aren't.
Yeah.
Hey, who's the woman who's running against Gary Peters?
I don't know.
No, you know the one who's trying to run, who's running all of those ads.
Oh, I haven't seen any.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Lind?
Yeah, something like that. I was at the Secretary of State the other day, and there's this kind of nice-looking conservative woman, maybe my age, standing out front with a clipboard. And I'm thinking, oh, God, here we go. You know, what's going on? And she goes, hi, I'm getting signatures because whatever her name is running for, trying to run for Congress. And you know what I did?
What?
I've been meaning to tell you this all week. I looked at her and I just shut her down. I go, oh, hell no. Uh-huh. And I just kept walking. She goes, oh, okay.
Wait a minute. How do you know it wasn't somebody you would?
No, she knew. No, it was for her.
Oh, it was for the woman herself.
Yes. Yes, for the candidate.
How did you know she wasn't somebody you would have supported?
Peter, she's the one putting up those anti-Obamacare ads.
Oh. And she herself is down there petitioning?
No, it was someone working for
her. Oh, I got you. Okay.
Oh, come with me. Get with me here.
All right.
Clearly, you don't listen to me anymore.
I do. You know, you're supposed to say, you never listen to me.
You never, isn't that what the wife says?
Yeah.
Or what wives say?
Wives say, mine doesn't.
You never listen to me.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, she doesn't?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Right. One of the things that Captain Paul Watson said on the Bill Maher show, right? Bill Maher?
Yeah.
Bill Maher show Friday night was that there is 7 million tons of plastic in the ocean.
Oh, it's horrifying.
He waited. No, I don't know. I was wondering. I just thought about it. How does he know?
There's some scientific way of measuring it.
Yeah. Well,
these big giant garbage dumps that just float around.
Yeah, what do they call them? They're like garbage islands.
It's awful. The first time I saw it, I gasped.
And things are now debris from the Fukushima. Thank you. It's easy for you to say. Fukushima.
Ahmadinejad. Come on.
Meltdown is now beginning to arrive on the West Coast in California and Oregon and Washington. One of the things, though, there are a number of cities have begun to ban plastic shopping bags.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know me, Peter. 17 years ago, I tried to get you to do a story, interview a guy who had invented this contraption to get plastic shopping bags out of trees, and you laughed at me.
Well, that was like those things that they used in old stores, reach up in the top with, right? It was the big deal.
Yeah, but it was some special one.
Yeah. Since 2007, plastic shopping bags have been banned in nearly 100 municipalities in the state, including Los Angeles. So that's in California.
I think that's good.
Yeah. You know.
But then there's the paper, and we're cutting down trees.
But they can do a lot of recycling.
Yeah, that's true.
If you get bags from...
But then there's the recycling that pollutes through the recycling process.
There's a lot of places.
I hate to be a hater or a naysayer.
Yeah. But at Holiday Market in Royal Oak, if you bring your paper bag back, I think you get like a nickel off or something.
And the whole trend of having your own shopping bags.
Yeah, actually.
My problem is I always forget to take them.
Sure. Well, you got to keep them in your car.
I keep everything else in there.
Yeah, I know. Actually, you have them in there sometimes and you can't find them.
I cleaned out the front seat.
Well, that's
good. Give me a break.
That's good. Let's go back to our phones. Our number is 248-544-WRIF.
It's 248-544-9743.
And here is Todd in Madison Heights. Todd, hi. You're on the air. Welcome. Hey, Todd. Maybe that didn't work.
You got to click it there, Peter.
I did. It's hard.
Click it again.
There you go. Todd, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hello, Peter. Hello, Jillian.
Hello, hi. Todd.
The person that's running is... Our Secretary of State.
State, yeah, that's right. What's her name? Something or other, Ann Lynn.
Carrie Lynn Land.
Thank you!
Yeah.
Do you see
that's the one that's running all the, dirty ads.
Yeah. Did you see why I said, oh, hell no, to that lady?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, man. Do not use the toilet while you are talking to us on
flushing?
The air.
Are you flushing?
I'm not. I'm in a car.
Oh, okay.
What's that noise?
I don't know.
Potholes.
Probably the potholes.
There you go. I'm saving you, Todd.
Thank you. No, it is the potholes.
Okay.
Well they're going to fix them.
Go in one.
They're just talking. I was thinking, I couldn't believe this, that the Republican, I don't know, it was the House or the Senate, just allocated almost $500 million in Michigan to fix potholes.
Oh,
and I thought, I can't believe they're that generous. And even Governor Snyder, the Republican governor, said that's not enough.
They won't fix Detroit, but when it comes to the potholes, we're going to take what we can get.
That's right.
We need them fixed. 96 is a disaster.
Yeah, they've shut down that large portion of it. Speaking of people who are listening who have to get up and go to work tomorrow, if you normally take 96, I might want to check your route.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 miles, 6 miles, or 7 miles.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
You
can do 94 and 275. You can just go all the way around. Different ways you can do that.
If you're listening somewhere else, folks, sorry, this is Detroit Talk.
Yeah, well, Michigan is the state with the most potholes out of every state in the country.
Is that right?
Yes.
And also, maybe, I don't know if this is true in other states, we say there's two seasons in Michigan, winter and construction.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm not going to complain about the construction.
That what?
They've already put our state flower out already.
What's that?
The construction barrel.
Oh.
I like that.
And I've seen, I've actually seen the state bird, too, the fly.
Oh, God.
All right, Todd, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
All of which reminds me, making fun of our dear state, which actually it's a...
I love Michigan.
I do, too. But here is an email. I thought we'd get somebody from... Oh, wait a minute. I wanted to read this here. Robert, listening in Spring Valley, California, writes, Dear Peter and Jalene, he just talks about the article. You know, one of the things that the conservatives are starting back, you remember, what was her name, that woman that quit the governorship of Alaska and that, what?
Sarah Palin.
Oh, Palin. I thought you said I was palling around with somebody. But anyway, she was talking about death panels, which would decide whether grandma lived or died. And so Robert, should have read this over first, but the article relates how the Canadians balance protecting people and their families by keeping those decisions out of the court about life and death, where decisions can take far too long. Both their system and the Affordable Care Act are better than having insurance companies decide everything as they've done for decades. Indeed. But that was not the one, there is a friend of mine that lives in Livonia, and he always calls it Analville, which I don't know why that makes people laugh, because it sounds like it refers to a body part where the sun don't shine.
That's why you're saying it,
no,
Peter.
No.
Oh, come on.
It's just backwards. Anyway, this is from Jojo. Not Jojo, but Joe writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. As we are continuously bombarded with all the dark and dreary news headlines each week, it is good to hear you lighten the mood of the program occasionally with a bit of humor, says Joe. Although the majority of people living in and around the city of Livonia may not have ever heard of the name Analville, anyone from this area hearing it for the first time is most likely going to find the name absolutely hilarious.
Good.
I have to admit that I get a kick out of hearing those sarcastic nicknames for cities in our area. Jalene, need not worry.
Okay. I just don't want Peter to lose credibility.
Right. They're all in good fun, and I doubt that anyone seriously takes offense to them.
Yeah.
I have the distinct honor and privilege of living in such fine communities as Analville, Wasteland, and Garbage City.
There you go. Right. Okay.
I enjoyed numerous visits to the People's Republic of Ann Arbor and Redford, whose slogan is the gateway to the suburbs. I don't really get that one. And we can't forget Smelvindale, Stinkin' Park, and Highland Dark. No streetlights, thanks
to
DTE.
That's right. Yeah. Although our friend did a campaign to raise money for solar streetlight. There is one solar streetlight.
And actually the city has put in the city of Detroit has put in over 3,000, what are those new thingies?
Streetlights?
Yeah, but I can't think what they call them.
Light bulbs?
Yeah, that'll do. Modern stuff, though. Don't write in. I'll think of it in a second. Also,
LED?
Something, I like LED or something like that. And there's, up this way, there's Royal Joke and Joke Park. And I don't know what they call it, Ferndale. But they call that Fabulous Funky Ferndale.
And it is.
And there's Pleasant Ridge on the west side of Woodward. And on the east side of Woodward, it's Peasant Ridge.
Oh, God. It's really not peasant either.
Well, compared to...
some of those big houses.
Yeah, big house. All right, let's take a break.
This is our final segment, so if you want to get any calls in or emails, this is your time to do it. Did you see, could it be that George Zimmerman actually painted Trayvon Martin and sold it for $30,000?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
Someone let me know.
But, we haven't talked about Ukraine at all. We're sending...
Sounds sexy.
But guess what? We might send some warships into the Black Sea right off of the coast of Crimea.
Oh, excellent.
That'll help the stuff.
Yeah.
Right back after these.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night Call.
Hey, listeners, Verizon stores are the only place to get your hands on the all-new HTC One M8. Buy one for just $199.99 and get a second one free. Click the banner now. For best results, choose Verizon. New to your activation required per phone. Upgrade early termination and other fees may apply.
Baseball fans, text to win a 20-person suite to a Detroit baseball game. Just look for the Winner Circle logo at participating Atlas Oil Supply gas stations. Once at your favorite Winner Circle gas station, text to win. Code words can be found at the pumps. No purchase necessary. Participating stations and official rules at atlasoil.com. Listen for details on when WRIF will be at a Winner Circle station near you. Check the Atlas Oil Facebook page for additional giveaways. Text to win the Detroit Baseball Suite, courtesy of Atlas Oil and its local Winner Circle gas station owners.
During these tough economic times when many families are living paycheck to paycheck, it can be easy to lose sight of the importance of saving for the future. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to know there are some simple steps you can take to set aside dollars each month for retirement, college tuition, or unexpected expenses that could come your way. Most important is to review all your expenses and establish a monthly budget. Then examine every spending category and cut 10% from each. You can't reduce fixed expenses like rent or mortgage or a car payment, but you can easily cut back in many other areas like entertainment or using mass transit when possible instead of driving. And take a look at trying to bundle services such as your cell phone, land phone, cable TV, and internet service. For more tips and to speak with a certified credit counselor who can start you on the right track, call the NFCC at 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. This has been a public service message from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Night Call is back on 101 WRIF. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. This is our final segment. Phones are open for you. 248-544-WRIF.
That is 248-544-9743.
And right up at 1 a.m., I will have a guest who's critical of Obamacare, thinks the Affordable Care Act isn't going to be very affordable. It won't care for people, and they're not a right-winger.
And they are a doctor.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what Popeye says?
What?
I may not be a doctor, but I'm losing my patience.
Oh, God.
With Bluto.
God, Peter.
Now, I just, by the way, I might go to this. In, what's the name of the town? San Miguel de Allende in Mexico. What's the name of that travel man? Condé Nast?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Travel magazine. You didn't finish the word.
Yeah. Has declared San Miguel the best city in the whole world.
So why are you going?
Because there's a conference that's called Post-Capitalist Conference.
Oh.
And I noticed, in looking at the website, that Dr. Margaret Flowers, who's my guest at 1 a.m., is going to be there as well.
So where regionally would this be?
Regionally, I think it's north of Mexico City.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, San Miguel.
Maybe in the Monterrey area?
Yeah, and I have a friend there who, you know, the Diego Rivera murals at
DIA?
At the Detroit Institute of Arts, yeah. My friend is beginning to look increasingly like Diego Rivera. He lives down there, and he's doing murals now as well. So I think he's really channeling Rivera.
I think that's a great idea.
Winston Smith, in fact, writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, talking about Ron. Ron said, doctors are closing their doors because of Obamacare. And Winston says, does he mean people who study for 10 years are just going to take a job at McDonald's because they don't like Obamacare? And, you know, I just Googled doctors quitting for Obamacare and couldn't come up with anything. So, Ron, don't call back, but if you can send me something or call next week. Like to know where you got this information. Okay, we got some more calls, so let's take those. That's what we're here for, 248-544-WRIF. It's Walter in Detroit. Walter, hi, you're on the air.
How do you do, Peter and Jolene?
Hi,
hello,
doing
Walter.
Good.
A long-time admirer and a first-time participant.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Yeah, for sure.
That United Nations organization that announced the climate warming on opening day sort of spoiled it for me.
On the opening day, well, the Tigers won at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way they worded it, it's how was it?
Well, there not might not be a 2048 season. That's sort of what they
said. Is that what he was saying?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, give him a chance, yeah.
They worded it as severe, not the climate change, not the Tigers, severe, pervasive, and irreversible.
Yeah, that's scary.
So
the last one.
At that
one.
Point, I'm sorry.
I'm saying that the point, last part. sorry.
At that point, I almost stopped worrying about it. And then... And then in conjunction with the search for the Malaysian airliner, we've learned so much about debris fields.
Right.
I had no idea the Indian Ocean was so big and that there was so much debris in it.
Yeah. Mm.
And then the pundits I heard on United Nations Announcement Day, one of them mentioned a debris field as big as a fur ball between California. I'm sorry, a fur ball as big as Alaska between California and Hawaii. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
I just heard that the same time you did.
What? What? A fur ball?
Like a,
well, that's
just
how
a
they
big
describe what
ball.
It looks
oh,
like.
Oh, big garbage ball, yeah. Yeah.
It's a big debris field, and it's somewhere between California and Hawaii.
They estimate that there are a million styrofoam cups thrown into the ocean every day. And Captain,
that is just awful.
And Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society was saying that what happens is that these, he said, oil at least sinks to the bottom. This stuff begins to break up and gets into smaller and smaller pieces, and then fish ingest them, and,
ugh.
You know, that's... So, you know, there was an American poet, E.E. Cummings. I always repeat his little phrase. I don't want to startle you, but they mean to kill us all.
All small caps.
Wait, can you say that one more time?
Oh, E.E. Cummings, all small caps.
Yes, yeah.
Ah.
And repeat what you said, Peter.
That he had this line in one of his poems. I don't want to startle you, but they mean to kill us all.
I like the drift.
Yeah.
But speaking
no
of the
pun
Tigers,
intended yeah. drift, yeah.
But I don't know which is worse, the non-believers that the Tigers are no good when they're 4-1, or the climate change objectors. I encountered one this winter on one of those deep snow days when I was trying to get some traction on a tricycle and heading home to the point, and there was this guy out shoveling his snow and ranting about climate warming. Yeah. Because it was so obvious, because it had snowed, that it was ridiculous to even go there.
See, yeah. They just have no clue.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so off base.
Because it's not...
One has nothing to do... That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Global warming...
And you know that, Walter.
Global warming all over, or, you know, the total planet global warming, is one aspect of climate change.
Yes.
But it's also
climate
gonna create,
change is the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's very frequent that we could be having winters like this every winter and summers that we're going to be wishing we were having winter. Well, Walter, thank you so much.
I can't imagine that right now.
Yeah, no. I got to get some more calls. But
thanks, Walter.
Hey, Walter.
Well, thank you.
Call again, please.
Yes.
Okay?
We'll do.
All right.
Don't be a stranger.
Don't be a stranger.
I love after all these years, 43 years this show's been on the air, and there's still people who are calling in for the first time.
There you go.
It's a beautiful thing.
We were talking about names of cities that people call them, like Analville and Royal Joke and stuff like that. Here is Dave. I'll let Dave say what city he's from. Dave, hi, you're on the air.
I'm living in Sunline, but I was raised in Hippie Woods.
Hippie Woods.
That's my street.
Harper Woods.
Yeah,
right.
Harper Woods.
I've
right.
never heard that. Are there a lot of hippies out there?
There was.
Not anymore.
Dave?
No.
Were you one of them?
Yeah, but I also did a book for you to read.
What's that?
The World Without Us by Alan Weisman.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I actually interviewed him about his latest book last week, I think. If you go back, if you want to hear it, if you can go back to our archives, either at WRIF.com or at Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And he talks something, I can't remember the, it's, I can't.
He talks about the garbage, trash, well, okay, I'll let you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Peace,
yeah.
man.
Peace out. Yeah, right. Yeah, good book. Yeah. Here's something I think is going to be interesting. This is Kevin and Wayne. Kevin, hi, you're on the air.
Hey.
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 I don't know. I was just reading about, like, Nikola Tesla recently, and I can't get it off my mind. Like, he did a lot of amazing stuff, and he was a really smart dude. Like, yeah. We shouldn't even really know Thomas Edison's name, like, compared to Tesla, I feel like.
I know, name a few.
But, like, yeah, like, I was looking into it, and he had this idea to make three practically limitless energy available to, like, the entire world, wireless. And he was being funded in his research by J.P. Morgan. And then when J.P. Morgan realized that there was no profit in this for him, he pulled his funding. And then, like, and so Tesla continued his research, and he was, like, making progress on it and everything. Like, he was able to, like, power light bulbs without any connection or anything.
Yeah, wireless transmissions, and didn't he invented X-rays and...
X-rays, he didn't invent X-rays.
I think so. Air conditioning?
Yeah, he invented X-rays. I don't know about air conditioning, but...
And then he died poor.
Penniless, yeah. Well, he was screwed real badly by Thomas Edison. And who he worked for. Edison was a big promoter of direct current, which would fry everybody.
He
stole his patents. He hired him and then pulled the rug out from under him. And Tesla wanted, AC, alternating current. But, you know, and Tesla's always been this figure. He's been in a lot of Tesla figures have been in a lot of movies. Some about magic. I can't remember which one. And he had this thing, ball lightning, that that he could create.
The rock band named themselves.
The rock band did, and then the electric car. There's an electric car.
The
Tesla as
that
well.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he had this idea to make, like, free energy available for given to the whole world and everything. And so he continues research after, what's his name? JP Morgan pulled the funding.
Yeah.
But then all his equipment, his place or whatever was all burned down 2 years later.
Right. And Jefferson just wrote from the other room that the movie I was thinking of about magic was called The Prestige. Prestige.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, I've seen it a couple times. Very, very interesting movie. Yeah, so if you're into Tesla, check out, Kevin, check out this movie. It's called The Prestige.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
All right, appreciate
it. Thanks, Kevin.
Have a good one.
I think that's great. He's discovered something old, but, you know.
So, here, we haven't talked at all. I don't think it's really big on everybody's radar. Wait a minute, let me back up. Speaking of not being on everybody's radar... Here are these climate scientists, hundreds of them, that have put together this analysis of what's happening with the atmosphere and the climate change and global warming and all of that, and saying the worst is yet to come. And they did this study, and of the 20 top concerns that Americans have, climate change and the risk coming from it is number 19.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So this, it could be.
I'd be interested in seeing what's ahead of that. I mean, yeah, it probably has more to do with the here and the now.
Oh, yeah. What's number 20?
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't find this, what the list was. But it could be a lot of things. It's hard to get our brains around the fact that talking about having the rug pulled out from under you, that the basis of life, human life on the planet, could be pulled out from under us, or all the megafauna. Yeah, there's been extinctions before.
Megafauna.
That's the big. We the big.
I like
megafauna.
That.
Yeah, but there are other issues that I don't think play real big on people's radar. But who knows when things could get out of hand? Yeah, I was saying about this thing in Ukraine and the Russians annexing Crimea, taking it back essentially. That that this could get out of hand. And one of the things that I said is that everything everybody says about each other in this situation is true. What they say about Putin is true. What Putin is saying about a lot of what's happening in Ukraine and what the role of the United States and the West is true as well. But for some reason or other, we've gotten back into this Cold War mentality where it seems okay for the United States to be having, to inserting itself into disputes thousands of miles from its border.
To puff our chests repeatedly.
Yeah, well, and the chest that gets puffed, if you think about it, ultimately, is the military-industrial complex. And the concern partly was, and it's not a conspiracy, you know, there's a U.S.-Ukrainian business council made up of all the big U.S. corporations that want...
Of course.
Yeah, that want to make sure that Ukraine was inserted into Western economic and, worst for Russia, Western military alliances. So NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, of which Central Europe is nowhere near, and Reagan, was it Reagan or Bush one? One of those. They pledged to Gorbachev at the time that there would not be any attempt to bring the Western or the Eastern countries, the former Soviet bloc country, into NATO. And so this has been totally violated. And it would be, what this would be the equivalent of if Putin's government, the Russian government, were trying to get Canada and Mexico to be aligned with their political bloc, that they were going...
It's just like that, yeah. Too.
And yet, most Americans see nothing wrong with the United States continually asserting military power all around the world because we are, either they say we're defending our interests, which I'd like to know what they are.
I feel like these people just don't understand. They just don't get it. How dangerous that is.
Well, it is so militarism.
And unnecessary.
Militarism and imperialism, the empire extended abroad, is such a permanent part of our culture that no one thinks anything of it.
That's right.
That I think I said at the beginning of this show that Secretary of Defense Hagel goes over to Japan and says, oh, don't worry, we'll defend you against North Korea and China.
I don't think you said that.
No?
Okay.
Maybe I didn't.
Or I just wasn't listening
to
you
thinking,
anymore.
For one thing, I mean, I wonder what the Chinese are thinking. Yeah. Again, this would be like China saying, going to Mexico City, the ambassador to Mexico or the chief of defense of China, and in Mexico and say, if the United States ever attacks you, you can depend on us to defend you.
Yeah.
I mean, we go bonkers.
Yeah, it would be unacceptable. There would be some type of action stopping it.
Yeah, for sure.
Blocking
it. It says the U.S. is likely to move a warship into the Black Sea, which is right where Crimea is, and send a small team of soldiers to Europe as part of NATO's effort to bolster allies in Eastern Europe who are worried about Russia's military annexation of Crimea.
Now, haven't they been talking about doing this for a few years, with this Black Sea?
What, who?
The U.S. defense.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But it was not a military annexation. It was actually, what they should have done. Like the United States went to the United Nations and talked about, under Bush and talked about invading Iraq, and they wouldn't give the go-ahead, so they just said, okay, we're going to do it. So Russia should have gone to the United Nations and said, we want to annex Crimea. And they would go, no, you can't do that. And they go, we're doing it anyway.
Right.
I mean, that would be like the same thing.
Yeah.
The officials say military commanders are considering ways to bolster America's military presence in the region.
It's big enough everywhere.
Yeah. The officials said the U.S. is encouraging allies to contribute more aircraft to the Baltic Air Patrol mission and beef up military support to Poland.
I mean, that is just...
I mean, this is insane.
Such a bad idea.
Because during the Cold War, I mean, most people that are in the days of rabid anti-communism, the Soviet Union was this, bent on world conquest. It was this danger to freedom and democracy all over the world. It came out in some people, small group of people at the time knew it, that the Soviet Union never had any intention of invading Western Europe. What they wanted to do was secure their little empire there in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. They were frightened to death of the United States.
There's a lot of talk going on.
Yeah, yeah. But it was always portrayed as this aggressive power, which it was actually fairly conservative. the United States was always up in the face of the Soviet Union. Now they're up in the face of Russia. So it seems like we've learned nothing.
Yeah, it does seem like that. So, you know, we were talking about, I'm going to end the show on a light note.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, let's do that.
We haven't. I got a light note, too, to end it on. But
you
go
do?
Ahead.
Okay, well, we've been talking about, I don't know what the word to use is, of other names for cities, you know, like Livonia, Ainoville, that's what it is, backwards, or Wasteland, or Garbage City, and these are names that people wrote to us, by the way, except Peter owns Ainoville. This is from Sky, who wrote into our email address, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She said, she or he said, I live in Riverview, but with the smell coming from the landfill, I've taken to calling it River Ew.
There you go. Hey, by the way, this thing about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate.
I thought you were leaving this on a light note.
But an old pal of mine, I don't know whether he's listening. He's certainly on our Facebook. I guess if it's on our Facebook, I can say his whole name.
I don't know.
All right, Danny lives in Florida. Hi, Danny, if you're listening.
Hi, Danny.
Yeah. And so the panel's warning on climate risk. Worst is yet to come. He says, is anybody listening? Yeah. Okay. Bright note, I forgot about Hash Bash.
Oh, yeah. Happened I had a Saturday. Ton of friends who went yesterday. They said it was a great time.
15,000 people were there. This is a Hash Bash.
8,000. Wow, really? 15,000.
That was what was in one of the papers. Okay, yeah. 8 to 15,000.
You know how that goes.
And this is a marijuana reform action, rally, protest. And it is also a party.
It's a good time.
So as we used to say, people threw down till they threw up.
Well, yeah, that's usually alcohol
drinking,
related.
You're right. Yeah, that's right. Marijuana doesn't have any bad effects on you, does it?
You could maybe get a little hungry. Yeah. Maybe want to take a nap.
All right. Yeah, you can go get a blimpy.
Why would you say that?
I think that's the home where it started.
Oh, it is?
Blimpy Burgers, yeah.
Okay.
Remember where Blimpy, since we were talking earlier about a comic character?
About Popeye?
Popeye, yeah. He was the character who was always eating burgers.
Oh, I thought that was Wimpy.
Well, maybe it's Wimpy Burgers. It is. It's Wimpy.
At least we can still talk about regular everyday things like that here.
Right. So, with that, stay
Get
tuned.
Get yourself a Wimpy Burger or a Blimpy Burger.
Yeah, right.
Whatever
there
you
are
choose.
Blimpies. Blimpies is a chain.
Yeah, it's like
Wimpy's
sub
is
sandwiches.
In Ann Arbor. That's right. But stay tuned. Dr. Margaret Flowers is next. She's going to be saying from the left, she's critical of the Affordable Care Act, and also novelist Mike Bond talking about his latest thriller, House of Jaguar. Next week we'll do it again.
Thank you very much to Jefferson for taking our phone calls, as always, and being such a dedicated producer of the show. And most of all, thank you, listeners, for listening to Night Call.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. We'll return with more Night Call right after this. Night Call. Night Call. Night Call. Night Call.
Did you know that millions of seniors are treated each year for fall-related injuries? If you or someone you love is elderly and living alone, get ready for a toll-free number that could save a life. LifeStation is a medical alert system that provides the security and peace of mind to live a fulfilling and independent life in the comfort of your own home. Call LifeStation now at 1-855-322-5013. For less than a dollar a day, LifeStation offers quick access to medical help at just the touch of a button, 24 hours a day. 7 days a week. And with LifeStation, there's no setup fee and no long-term contracts. You can cancel at any time. Call right now for more information at no obligation. 1-855-322-5013. Put emergency help at your fingertips while maintaining your independence. Call LifeStation at 1-855-322-5013. The call and information are free. 1-855-322-5013. That's 1-855-322-5013.
License and registration.
But I'm walking.
Do you want to upset an officer of the law?
No, sir.
Good. I pulled you over today for littering.
I didn't litter.
Wow. That's what they all say. Unfortunately, I saw you drop a pair of thunder thighs a few blocks back. Probably happened as you were biting into that apple you're holding.
How'd you know they're my thunder thighs?
Well, my young friend, I'd like to say 2 years in the police academy helped figure it out, but between us, It was smallstep.gov.
Smallstep.gov?
Yep, Rooney. It's this site with tons of easy ways to lose weight. Some steps are so easy, people don't realize they're doing them. Like you taking small step number 83, snack on fruits. Go to smallstep.gov, you'll see. You can drive off now.
I'm still walking.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Voting has begun in the 2014 Riff Rock Girl Search.
Get more details online at WRIF.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Night Call is back on 101 WRIF. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. It's April 1st, and no jokes here. And this is, actually, it's the day after, the last day for the Affordable Care Act, for people to sign up for it, popularly called Obamacare. And this has been a real split, it seems, between the left and the right. The right hates the health care, the idea of health care going to them and paid for by us, and that's, of course, in quotes. And so it's sort of broken down, seemingly, along those lines. Although there's more criticism of Obamacare, the ACA, on the left side of things than one would imagine. And one other phrase before I introduce our guest, and that's conscientious objector. If you remember that word at all, maybe some of the younger folks don't, but it was something that we associated with resistance to the draft, World War II and the Vietnam War, where young men said, I will not fight in war. I have my conscience says no to it. Can you imagine, though, resistance to the Affordable Care Act based on that? Mostly the people that have opted out have been motivated by conservative right-wing ideas because, in fact, for a while there was there among conservatives they were saying opt out. Well, Margaret Flowers is a pediatrician in Baltimore, and she's co-director of itsoureconomy.yeah. She just wrote the piece, Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the ACA. And she's been an outspoken advocate for Medicare for All. That would be a single-payer health care system. So this kind of confounds what we normally consider to be resistance to Obamacare. Let's say hello to Dr. Margaret Flowers. She is in her office in Baltimore. Thank you for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter.
Yeah, and also I forgot to mention that you've been arrested three times for civil disobedience, and is this around resistance to Obamacare?
Well, it was three times that year during the health reform process that I was arrested. I've been in more actions than that, but those were my first actual actions. Where I resisted and was arrested.
Now, that's kind of unusual. One, first off, doesn't think of a doctor even risking that after having invested so much money, so much time, so much sleepless nights. You know, you're a pediatrician now, and one usually doesn't think of doctors getting arrested. Tell us the circumstances.
Well, that was actually my first arrest, and I agree. I didn't really expect that was a path I would be taking. But in the end of 2008, after Obama was elected, we joined together with a large coalition of organizations and started meeting with members of Congress to say that as health reform is on the agenda, let's talk about single payer and compare that to what Congress is putting together. And we thought things were going along pretty well. We were having good meetings, but as soon as they started the hearings, they completely shut out the people that we suggested as people to testify. These are people that are experts in health policy and health finance. And so we hit a real wall where it was, if we're not even going to be allowed to present the facts in the hearings, then we're completely shut out. We have to expose that. And so a group of eight of us, which included three doctors and two lawyers, stood up in the Senate Finance Committee one by one and objected to the fact that the single-payer supporters were excluded, and we were arrested for that.
Hmm. And that was the first time, and there was a total of three. Can a doctor lose their license for being arrested like this? Were you really gambling?
Well, I was concerned about that, as were the other two doctors, but what we decided is that if our medical society brought this up as an issue in terms of our license, that we'd be happy to take that on because we felt that we were standing up on behalf of our profession and on behalf of our patients to expose the corruption that was being involved in the whole process.
Well, I suspect, and this is my fault, that people may be a little confused. Now, you, as a doctor, and what we've said, you want full medical care for everyone, yet you are objecting to this extension to millions of people that would have health insurance now under the Affordable Care Act. What's going on here?
Well, what happens if I look at the whole picture of the Affordable Care Act, what we're seeing is that it is further privatizing our health care. It's causing large consolidations by private corporations of not just health insurance companies, but also the health providers buying up hospitals and practices. And it's degrading our public insurances, Medicaid and Medicare, and privatizing those further. It's a huge transfer of our public dollars directly to the private insurance industry, but we've done nothing to change that industry's behavior. They're still going to be denying care and making health care unaffordable and out of the reach of tens of millions of people in the United States. So it's worsening our system as opposed to moving it in the direction we should have, which is a universal, publicly financed, lifelong, comprehensive health care system.
Essentially, as we said at the beginning, Medicare for everyone rather than just over 65. You begin it when you are born.
And
that's understandable. But some people have said, you know, and certainly the Republicans and the conservatives see this. This is just, they say, a foot in the door. This is on the road to universal medical care financed by the government, like occurs in all other advanced industrial countries. And certainly the whole liberal establishment, including independent liberals, not just Democrats, think this is good. It's not, it's flawed. It's heavily flawed. There's not a public option, which means the costs are higher. But we're on our way. But how do you respond to that?
It's absolutely a step in the wrong direction. What we're doing is giving hundreds of billions of dollars directly to the private industry. We even have, I know, thousands of volunteers out there selling private insurance for them. But what they're doing is each of the, you know, regulations that was written into the law to try to control their behavior and actually make them people's health care, they've been able to work around those so that they can continue to siphon money out of our system, deny care to people, keep it out of the reach of people. And so all these things that you're hearing in the media about not being able to drop people, not being able to deny people because of pre-existing conditions, they're finding ways to work around that, and we can discuss some of those in specific if you want to. So it's just what we're going to see is we're going to continue to see people going bankrupt because of medical costs, people avoiding care, self-rationing because of health care costs. We're going to continue to see our health outcomes doing poorly, and that's something that shouldn't be happening in the wealthiest country in the world.
I have to say, I'm rarely shocked, and this is rather shocking to me because I, like so many other people, have encouraged both my listeners and on my website, peterwerby.com, to enroll in the Affordable Care Act. Margaret Flowers is my guest. She's a pediatrician in Baltimore, and she's just written a piece called Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the ACA. You can find that at popularresistance.org. And so, I don't know, I mean, were you hoping that your act of, and well, I don't think we've said this, you have not signed up for the Affordable Care Act, and right now you have no insurance at all?
That's correct. I've been without insurance for a few years, and I was faced with a decision when the deadline came. I don't qualify for Medicaid. I'm not old enough yet for Medicare, so I was going to be forced to purchase private insurance. But I've been fighting for a decade now to get rid of the private insurance industry, so I just couldn't in good conscience give my money to the industry that I'm fighting to eliminate. The whole Affordable Care Act has actually, in addition to degrading our public programs, is also significantly lowered the bar on what's considered to be private insurance coverage in this country. And so we're seeing a race to the bottom now in coverage, not just through the health insurance exchanges, but also through employer-based plans. So it's just driving us in the wrong direction.
Now, Dr. Flowers, people usually think of physicians as making a fair amount of money. One would think that you could purchase your own individual insurance, or is that part of your your objection that you don't even want to purchase, even though you, I suspect you could. I'm not counting your dollars, but one suspects that you could purchase your own private insurance.
Well, I just can't give my money to this industry for one thing, and the other is that I don't, looking at, you know, the way that the insurance is structured, I don't have any confidence that if I bought an insurance premium and had a significant illness that I would be able to afford the care that I need. What they're doing is they're severely restricting their networks to leave out major medical centers, major cancer centers, so that if someone does have a significant illness, it's very possible that they'll end up having to go outside of the insurance network to get that care, which means that the patient ends up paying 100% or most of the cost. So that, you know, as you probably are familiar, the number one cause of bankruptcies in the United States is from medical illness and costs. And about 80% of people that go bankrupt because of medical illness or costs had health insurance. So it's just not protective in this country. And so I just can't give my money to an industry that I know is going to hang on to that money. It's going to be corrupt. It's going to play games. It's going to deny necessary care. We need to get rid of them in the United States. We need to go to what Congressman Conyers has been putting forth in Congress for over 10 years now. It's called H.R. 676, the Expanded and Improved Medicare for All Act.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this, of course, flies in the face of a lot of what people have been led to believe. And I mean, do you feel, were the conservatives actually onto something and more perceptive of the Affordable Care Act than actually the liberals were?
Well, sometimes, you know, the conservatives do sometimes give the truth. I don't know, it's hard to say because I see so much deception coming from both of the corporate parties. So I think, you know, it's interesting. It's a lonely place to be criticizing the Affordable Care Act from the left.
Sure.
From, you know, someone who actually supports a truly universal, affordable health care system, because we're in this odd situation where the Affordable Care Act is based on policy that came out of conservative institutions like the Heritage Foundation. And so it was passed in Massachusetts under a Republican governor. So it's a Republican conservative type of health care plan that was picked up by the Democrats. And it's really amazing because you have all these so-called progressive institutions and Democrats defending this privatization of our health care. But somebody has to tell the truth. Somebody has to say that the fundamental thing we should be talking about in public right now is not how many people have insurance, but do we want to continue to treat healthcare like a commodity, like a car or a cell phone? Or do we understand that healthcare is a public good, something that everybody needs? And so if we believe it's a public good, then we need to embrace a program like every other industrialized nation has that treats it that way, that says healthcare comes first, not profits. People's lives come first, not corporate profits.
What about, and this is sort of a variation of a question I asked earlier, is Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is it better than nothing for people that don't have insurance now?
Well, there is, data to show that people who have health insurance have, you know, better health outcomes than those who don't. But what we're seeing right now, as I said, is a race to the bottom in what's considered to be coverage. So I'm very concerned with the new, onset of these narrow and ultra-narrow insurance networks in a time when we have, you know, 47% of people in the United States have zero wealth. You know, 76% of families are living paycheck to paycheck. So we're, through the Affordable Care Act, families, especially lower income and middle income families, are going to face significant financial barriers to actually getting health care. So we're seeing, we've had this trend since 2008 in the United States of more people self-rationing, not accessing healthcare services due to cost. And I'm concerned that that's going to continue under the Affordable Care Act. So we'll have to see if having these very skimpy plans is protective of people or not.
Well, Dr. Flowers, you probably have seen in the media these quotes from young people who they want to get into the pool. They're hoping, you know, they won't make claims, which, you know, they make a lot less than older people. But very frequently they say, I can't afford another $180 a month. I mean, the wages have been hit so badly and that labor is on the run so significantly that people are saying, well, I'd rather pay $95 because I'm a minimum wage worker. I'd rather pay $95 a year fine than have to pay $180 a month. I mean, to some extent, I don't know, or maybe completely, that makes financial sense.
Right. Well, if you're looking at our youth today that are facing, you know, massive college debt, a job market that's very poor, wages have been, you know, going down for most people. Yeah, they're really stuck in a difficult position. And to me, I see the insurance companies are preying on them, you know, are saying, well, you know, we need to have more healthy people so we don't have to spend too much on healthcare. Well, that's their bottom line. For private insurance companies is trying not to spend too much on healthcare. That's the wrong model. That doesn't really work if you're trying to create a system that's going to improve the health of people in this country. We need to have a system that's actually designed to support the health of our population, to make it accessible to everyone.
Well, I don't even know how people get through it. My wife and I just signed up for some new health insurance, and I know my head was swimming, and I figure I'm at least as smart as the average person, and yet younger people, in fact, someone, a young colleague here said to my on-air partner and I when we do a live show, she said, well, which plan should I sign up for? And she kind of detailed some of it, and I said, I don't know what to say. I mean, for one thing, if you pay $180 a month, I think that's what she was going to have to pay, and you have a $2,500 deductible, that means you're only going to be able to use it in the best manner if you have something really terrible happen to you, right? So it's not going to do much for their, you know, like, checkup, or I guess checkups are free, aren't they? But I had no idea what to advise someone, and it all seems so complicated. I'm surprised as many people have signed up as they have.
Yeah, I call it a healthcare crapshoot, and it really is, because when studies have been done looking at the different plans that are out there on the exchanges, and it shows that, well, if you have, you know, cancer, there are certain plans that are better for you. If you have diabetes, there's other plans that are better for you, and so it's that's like almost impossible for people on their own to figure out which plan suits their current condition, you know, never figuring out that, well, I don't know what's coming down the road. How do I pick a plan for some unforeseen health problem that I may have in the future? And the reason that there's this difference is because the insurance companies have created these narrow networks. Some of them exclude 70% of the local hospitals. So say that your young colleague chooses a plan that's one of these narrow or ultra-narrow network plans, which are most of the plans are in that category, has a serious health problem, is taken to a hospital, and it's not one in her network, she's responsible for 100% of that cost. So what's going to happen? It's that's why we have medical bankruptcies in this country.
I was just looking at the website that your article is on, ACA's A Scam, Medicare for All, at popularresistance.org. Is that you? Is that your photograph there?
That's me. That's at a rally in 2009 outside in Washington, D.C., where we were.
And you can read Dr. Margaret Flowers' piece if you go to popularresistance.org. I'll have a link on my site, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Pardon me. Maybe I need some health care right now. Anyway, you use the word scam in this posting here. Do you think this is an intentional scam? I mean, I don't know if you can make this assessment. Some people have said that President Obama and the Democrats, this was the best they could do under the circumstances. This was the best best outcome possible. Most of them wanted single payer health care. Do you think this is actually an intentional scam to pay off like corporate masters that are donating funds, or is it? Do you think they're genuinely want health care for people?
No, as somebody who was there from the beginning, I had been pushing for health reform even before President Obama was elected, and so I saw as this whole process rolled out, how it was scripted and controlled to divide people that support single payer by creating this whole illusion of a public option, by paying off progressive organizations to support the law no matter what it ended up being, and by, you know, who they were inviting to the meetings and to testify. And it really was a scam. My partner, Kevin Zeese, and I wrote an article called Obamacare, the biggest insurance scam ever, because we looked at the stages of what's considered to be a successful scam. And a most successful scam is one where people don't realize that they've been scammed. They feel good about it. And we looked through and saw that Obamacare, the whole process, fit that entire process of a scam. I mean, this was a law where, you know, first off, from the very beginning, it was already decided through a white paper what the law was going to be, and it didn't include a public option. And then they scripted the event to try to have people hold house parties to get them to buy into this idea of this mandatory insurance model and use it, all the you know, propaganda words that they've been using throughout started back then. They excluded single payer from testifying, you know, from even really being talked about. So this is something that the process was driven towards a predetermined end. It was never meant to be about what's best for our population. So I do call it a scam, and it's a truly, you know, further enrichment of the private insurance industry, further privatization of our health care, destruction of our public programs. That's what's happening.
Now, you debated Dean Baker, and I'm forgetting what think tank he's part of, but he's been a guest on this show any number of times, and I think of him as a man of very high integrity, and yet, I mean, I hope you don't think he, I mean, you're welcome to your opinion, that he is not an agent of what you consider a scam. In other words, it seems like a lot of people that are, you know, that you and I would agree with generally about these issues, support Obamacare. What did Dean? I mean, I'm not expecting you to spend your time arguing against yourself, but how did that all go with Dean Baker?
Well, I think that, you know, Dean and I know each other. He's with the Center for Economic and Policy Research,
right.
And you know, which is a think tank in Washington D.C. And I think that, you know, he's part of the group of people that have, you know, looked at history and said, well, you know, people have been fighting for single payer for all these years. They've never gotten it. This is, you know, what we've got, so we should support it because at least some people are getting insurance. I think that, you know, we have to continue to educate the population that, no, this actually is the wrong direction, that if we want to get real health reform, just like every other crisis that we're facing right now in this country, there's a solution to every one of these crises. And actually, if you look at the data, super majorities of people support these real solutions, but our current Congress and administration are not, well, even previous ones, are not acting, you know, on behalf of the people, are not putting these solutions in place. And that speaks to our dysfunctional political system. And that we can't wait for Congress to put this on the agenda. It's something that the people have to do. And so we've got to wake up and realize that. I mean, I think in Detroit, you're recognizing that you guys are really on the end of this neoliberal economic agenda that's being put forth. I mean, you guys are the test city for it. How can you completely privatize a city, completely, you know, destroy the public institutions, the pensions, and even the, you know, the public resources in that city so that it can be exploited by wealthy people? And this trend is not going to end unless we join together in solidarity and stop it.
You actually sort of prefigured my final question, but I can put it a little, go beyond that a little. I agree with you 100%. I'm not very optimistic, particularly in the short run, unless this really doesn't work, unless the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, actually collapses or doesn't provide anything like what people anticipate. Do you think that's going to happen?
I do, and I base that on the data of what's happening in Massachusetts, which actually passed a very similar law in 2006. In fact, they actually have stronger protections of people to control their out-of-pocket costs. And a report just came out this week done by the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation, which is not a, you know, particularly progressive foundation, and Robert Wood Johnson as well, showing that having a high income or being insured in Massachusetts does not protect people from medical debt. Another report that was commissioned by the governor just recently showed that all of their rise in medical costs in Massachusetts was due to increasing the cost of services, not that more people were using them. So these are indicators that show that this system is not going to work. I think we're going to continue to see a trend of people that are denying themselves care based on cost. We're not going to see improvements in medical bankruptcies or health outcomes. And so we've got to talk about this and expose this and not get distracted by who's enrolling and who's not enrolling. But let's start talking about who's actually getting care, who's actually being protected financially, what actually is the solution that we want for our country. And that's a Medicare for All type of solution.
Well, I want to thank you so much. Dr. Margaret Flowers has been my guest. She's a pediatrician in Baltimore, co-director of It'sOurEconomy.yes. She has written the piece, Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the ACA. She is not enrolled and hasn't bought private insurance as a matter of conscience. It's posted at popularresistance.org. There'll be links to all of this on my website at peterwerbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Dr. Flowers, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to Night Call on 101 The Riff. Peter will be back with another guest in just a moment. Night Call. Night Call.
Hey listeners, Verizon stores are the only place to get your hands on the all-new HTC One M8. Buy one for just $199.99 and get a second one free. Click the banner now. For best results, choose Verizon. New to your activation required per phone. Upgrade early termination and other fees may apply.
This is your Car Care Minute. Drivers are keeping their vehicles longer these days and will eventually need the services of a reliable auto repair shop. With that in mind, here's some tips on how to choose one wisely. Start shopping for a repair facility before you need one. Ask your friends and associates for their recommendations. Don't choose a shop based solely on location. Look for a neat, well-organized facility. The staff should be courteous, and the service technician or consultant should be willing to answer your questions. Look for evidence of certified technicians, such as the ASE sign. And when you do select your facility, reward good service with repeat business and customer loyalty. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com. This is your Car Care Minute. Email, texting, and Twitter are some of today's communication tools. But when it comes to vehicle repair or service, a face-to-face meeting with your automotive technician is still the best method of communication to ensure a satisfactory service. But do your homework before taking your vehicle in for repairs or service. Read your owner's manual. Make a written list of your vehicle's dashboard warning signals or changes in performance and handling. Go through your list with the technician or service consultant. Let them diagnose and recommend a remedy. But do ask questions regarding the costs before work begins. Two-way communication. It's the key to better automotive service. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. You've got it on the award-winning Night Call on 101 WRIF. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. I think you know from listening to this show, this program for any appreciable amount of time that I rarely do novelists. It's always people that are bringing up the issues of the day, and essentially that's what this program is designed for. In fact, I am the public affairs director. But sometimes novels have that capacity to carry with them, besides just good writing, besides entertainment, besides letting us look at the world through the eyes of the author's fictitious characters, they often carry with them, particularly when they're set within historical and political contexts, saying something along the lines that I think need to be said. Obviously, the author does as well. Mike Bond joined us not so long ago. It was February 12th when I interviewed him about his new book, The Last Savannah, and boom, out comes another one, House of Jaguar. And Mike Bond is an incredible author, has quite a history, as we'll get to as we go along. He's been called the master of the existential thriller. That was by the BBC and the Washington Times, one of the 21st century's most exciting authors. Besides being a best-selling novelist, he's an environmental activist and international energy expert. And this is where House of the Jaguar comes in, a war and human rights correspondent, also an award-winning poet. I think I said to him last time, I can barely keep my shoes tight. I don't know how he does all this. But partly is maybe that it's because he's in Hawaii and he doesn't have to shovel the snow. Let's welcome Mike Bond again. Hi, Mike. Welcome back to the broadcast.
Well, hi, Peter. Thank you very much for inviting me again. It's quite an honor. And, you know, that's not true. I mean, we get tons of snow out here in Hawaii. I have to shovel every day.
I believe that.
It's worse than Detroit by far. I just have to tell you. So you shouldn't really give me a hard time about it, Peter.
Now, you've written any number of books. It looks like, I don't know, 9 or 10 here. And there was Insider's Guide to Kenya and an Insider's Guide to Mexico. But then in 1992, 1993, 1994, out came 3 novels. And now 2012, Saving Paradise, The Last Savannah, and now House of Jaguar. Why the big hiatus in between?
Well, I got involved in a lot of other things, a lot of human rights reporting and stuff like that, as well as some major environmental campaigns, international campaigns, and political campaigns. And I wrote several others that were long ones that are going to come out in the next year or so. I wrote one on Iraq and Afghanistan, which is called Assassins. And I wrote another one on the 60s, in which a lot basically about the whole 60s movement and everything from Motown to rock and roll to Vietnam to mind-bending drugs. And in fact, Detroit plays a major part in that novel. And so it isn't that I haven't been busy. It's just that it takes time to write these darn things, and then you got to edit them. You got to go through them, and then you put them on the shelf for a while, Peter, and then you go back to them, and you can. That's how to upgrade them, is to give them some time, and then come back and look at them with fresh eyes. But I have 2 more novels coming out this year, and probably 2 or 3 next year.
Wow.
Many of which, Peter, that I've worked on for quite a while, and it's kind of like cooking dinner. You keep cooking it until you get it where you want it, and then you eat it. So.
There you go.
It's the same idea.
Yeah. And actually, if I had a memory, I'd be dangerous. I always say that's right. You sent me a chapter from the book about the 60s, and I'm looking forward to the whole thing. I read that. I read the chapter about Detroit. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Bond is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His brand new book is House of Jaguar, and it's set during the time of the Guatemalan Civil War, a country that has just suffered such incredible hurt and devastation. A good part of it, the responsibility lies with the United States. But tell me the motivation, because sometimes people, when you have something to say about all of this along the lines that I just said, and sometimes people say, oh, they're just sort of pasteboard characters put there to enunciate the author's political views. When someone says that, how do you respond?
Well, it's very interesting that you said that, because what I try to do in all my books is to get the reader so deeply involved that they have lived the experience. And I do get a lot of response from readers saying that they forget to breathe. They're so terrified or so excited or so worried that they forget to breathe. And they pick the book up to read for 10 minutes, and 4 hours later, they're still there. So what I try to do is bring people into the tragedy or the beauty or the joy or the excitement, whatever it is, so deeply that the reader lives it. And that's how we make change. That's how we improve the world, is if everybody understands what's going on because they have felt it. So I don't ever get people telling me my characters are one-dimensional, because they're deep, alive human beings going through fear and love and worry and determination. And everybody faces death. I mean, death is the one rule. So what got me to write House of Jaguar was being a human rights correspondent and being down in Guatemala and seeing how horrible the situation was. I mean, this is a country that basically was taken over by the United Fruit Company, which is now called Chiquita Brands International. And the U.S. government used the U.S. Marines to basically hand the country over to the banana growers, the U.S. banana growers. And it led to years and years of war and devastation, in which U.S.-backed military dictatorships chased more than 2 million people out of their homes, killed 200,000 people, disappeared another 40,000 people, and tortured another 20,000 people to death in government prisons. It was a situation of such unbelievable horror that it had to be written about. I had to get it out to the world so people would understand and know, and maybe even change things. Peter, that was the idea.
Sure, and you know, this is not, pardon me, on people's radar, so this is excellent. This is being done, and you moved through the historic timeline of Guatemala quite quickly. A lot of what you were talking about began like 100 years ago, give us the historic setting of House of Jaguar, your latest novel.
Well, in 1983, I started going into Guatemala illegally as a human rights correspondent. And the reason when I say illegally, it basically involves swimming across a wide river called the Rio Dulce, which means sweet river or freshwater river. And because if you tried to go through on a passport control, you could very well be shot as a journalist. And so I made a number of trips through, and then I, living in Belize and going into Guatemala that way. And then finally I just moved into Guatemala permanently and tried to stay ahead of the death squads. What the U.S. Had done is basically the killings got so bad in the late 70s that President Carter cut off all military aid to Guatemala. And then in 1982-83, Ronald Reagan reversed that despite the genocides and started providing the Guatemalan army and thus the death squads with all the military equipment they wanted. And so this is the time that I was there, and it was just an atrociously dangerous time, atrociously dangerous. I said at one point I used to sleep in bathtubs when I could, because often when the death squad was going to kill you, they'd just shoot through the door, and sleeping in a metal in a cast iron bathtub could save your life. Most of what goes on in the book House of Jaguar is pretty close to what actually happened to me.
I actually have not read this. I read The Last Savannah, and I said I got to get people onto this book right away, because as you said, I mean, I'll just pick up a little bit of what you said to another question about these aren't one-dimensional characters. Just the first chapter of The Last Savannah is so gripping and so descriptive and evocative of the African savannah. And I was rooting for one of the characters, and boom, I mean, a surprise comes out of nowhere, almost brought me to tears, which, and I can't do that with one dimension. That's for absolute sure. My guest is author Mike Bond. His new novel, House of Jaguar, chronicles his own experiences in Guatemala from 1983 to 1985 as a war and human rights correspondent. One would think, as a credentialed reporter, that you'd be safe.
Oh, it was a terrible time. Over 150 journalists were killed by the death squads, and I was at one point in 1985 the last foreign journalist in Guatemala, because they'd all been killed or chased out. And at that point, I was, as I said, I was on the move all the time, trying to stay ahead of the death squads and the army, and trying to avoid being identified, and still trying to find out what was going on and who was being killed. And at that point, like 50 people a day were being assassinated by the death squads, in addition to the constant attacks of the army on villages where they would often take out a whole village of 200 people, sometimes take 3 days to kill them all, torturing the men and raping the women and cutting the children to pieces in front of their parents. So it was a tough time, Peter. And what's important, and one of the things I wanted to get across in House of Jaguar is the U.S. responsibility, because we sit up in the northern half of the Western Hemisphere, and we act very holy about democracy and all these other things. But what we did in all of Latin America over the last 100 years, as you just pointed out, and even as recently as 30 and 20 years ago, what we did was absolutely atrocious. I mean, we're responsible, and you name the country, Chile, Argentina, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, we did terrible things. We're responsible for the deaths of over 1 million people and thousands of people who were disappeared. And and never found, just taken and shot and dumped in the jungle somewhere. All of those military regimes were backed by the United States, were given arms by the United States, and were elected, and not elected, they weren't elected, were put in power by the United States. Pinochet in Chile is just another example.
That dictatorship, that horrible torture state that essentially was overthrown by Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. I don't even know if this is worth saying, but I always sort of react badly when someone says that we did this, we did that. And you use that, I mean, so you don't have to keep saying United States every time or the United States government. But is that fair? Was it we or can you make a distinction between United States policy? Because most Americans, like, for instance, when the CIA overthrew the democratically elected government of Guatemala in 1954 at the behest of the banana companies, everybody was told here, unless you had some little teeny left-wing paper like the National Guardian at the time, that you were told that this was these communists that were threatening our hemisphere. What sort of responsibility do we have, and is it fair to not use that plural pronoun?
That's a really good question, Peter, and a complicated one, because and this is one of the dilemmas that I've always faced, is if I'm going to be an American and take advantage of the amazing gifts of and the amazing opportunities that the United States provides its citizens, I also have to be responsible for what the United States does. I can't just have one side of the coin without the other. And I think this is what has been my life of activism, is that, yes, this is a wonderful country, but we've done atrocious things. And I think that we as a country and have to face up. It's only when you're honest that you can grow. And if you hide what you've done in the past, for whatever reason, it allows the same things to happen in the future. And So I think it's very important to write about these things. I write about the wonderful things this country has done, as well as the tragic things. And like in 1954, as you said, when the government of Guatemala, which was an elected government, freely elected by the people, was overthrown by the Eisenhower administration and the CIA, it was done not because these people were communists. That's always a nice thing to say, because it gets people on your side. But it was actually simply because the United Fruit Company owned 42% of the land, was only using 8% of it, and the newly elected government was trying to free up some of that land because they had thousands of starving peasants who needed land. But it's a distinction, as you point out, and a good one. I mean, those of us sitting around our kitchen tables listening to this interview, I mean, we're individuals, but we have to watch very carefully and oversee what our government does, because my opinion right now is the government of the United States does not really represent the will of the citizens.
Well, I think if you asked people and said, how many countries in this hemisphere has the United States invaded and occupied in the last 115 years, I think it would draw such a blank that people probably wouldn't even have considered it. And if you asked how many torture state dictators has the United States propped up, kept in business, same thing. Or if you said how many countries has the United States engineered the overthrow of democratically elected government, it's something that people don't even consider. Yet part of the gifts that we have, White Bond, and I know you realize, and that's why you've written House of Jaguar, is that we benefit from that without even realizing it. In fact, maybe this is a good point to discuss. Why was the Guatemalan military so awful that they dispossessed over 2 million people, killed more than 200,000, disappeared another 40,000, tortured 20,000 people to death in government prisons, and had death squads to the point when you were down there between 1983 and 1985, your life was at risk. Why were they doing all this? And plus, being supported by United States military aid.
Well, it's hard to believe, but then again, you go back to you talking about the military dictatorship of Guatemala, which is not really very different from the German Wehrmacht in 1940. And they had no concern about going into the Ukraine and killing hundreds of thousands of people. I've studied killers' minds a lot, and killers, once they start doing it, it's very easy to keep going. And the other thing was that the peasants in Guatemala, the hungry peasants, I mean, these people were making a dollar a day in working themselves to death in the banana farms, and food was expensive. Food was just about as expensive as it is here. So the people were resolute and determined, which made the military all the more determined to crush them. And it's interesting, that same year, 1954, just to go back to what you were talking about a minute ago, Peter, that was the same year that the Eisenhower administration and the CIA also overthrew the elected government of Iran, Mossadegh, the president who had been elected by a democratic election. And they deposed him, and they put the Shah, who was some little private in the army and had no background, no power, no anything. He was just malleable, somebody they could use. And they created this military state with the most dreadful intelligence apparatus called Sabak. And that, of course, eventually led to the Ayatollah and the takeover of the U.S. Embassy and all of the miserable years that have happened since and the millions of deaths in those wars. And when people talk about, oh, Iran is such a big problem, it's always important to go back to the roots of where a conflict came from. If we hadn't thrown over the government of Iran in 1954, we would not be facing the situation that we have with Iran right now. And I think as Americans, one of the things that we don't do, maybe all humans don't do this, is we don't go back to the roots of a conflict to try to understand what caused it. And until we understand what caused it, we can't solve it.
A lot of this about Guatemala is in House of Jaguar, Mike Bond's brand new novel from Mandevilla Press. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. And you're saying right now you can, which of the books was this one that you can get as an ebook?
Yeah, you can get all of my, or almost all my books as ebooks now, Peter, like as a Nook or a Kindle. And Amazon and Barnes & Noble for the next week or so I have a big sale on, and some of them, including House of Jaguar and The Last Savannah and another one, Saving Paradise, are at 99 cents for the ebooks now. So it's a marvelous time to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and if you have a Nook or a Kindle, and for 99 cents of each, you can pick up these books. And apparently, from what people and critics say, they're great reading. So now's the time to do it.
You know, people are so used to slaughter on television and movies and books. Mm-hmm. And the reason I've held off, quite honestly, reading House of Jaguar is some of the people's appreciation of it. Whereas, like the Manchester Evening News says, tough, intense thriller. London Broadcasting says, a riveting thriller, murder, politics, and lies. But the Liverpool Daily Post says the climax is the most horrifying I have ever read. And I don't know. I mean, I'll read it. I'll read it without a doubt. But is it? Would you say it's right up there with most horrifying?
Well, you know, several different reviewers have said that, Peter. And another reviewer just came in yesterday with basically the same comment. But what the climax, it's a love story. The whole of House of Jaguar is the love story of a Guatemalan doctor, a woman, and an American pilot. And when you love someone very deeply, what happens in war, too, is love gets very intense. When you don't know if you're going to live more than another 15 minutes or another day or another week, and you meet someone that you're deeply in love with, it's very intense. And so the end of House of Jaguar, which involves this love story, is just extremely intense. And again, what I'm trying to do is to bring the reader into what really happens in life so that we can make proper choices because we understand the difference between life and death. And we're less likely to waste our lives that way. Yeah, I mean, it's but a lot of reviewers are saying about the book, Peter, that it's just incredibly exciting and erotic and sexy, and there's sex in it too, a lot of sex. It's
okay.
And there's drugs in it. It's not all terrifying in it.
Well, that's good. I will start it. Well, you know, in House of Jaguar, as we said, it's based on your own experiences as a war and human rights correspondent in Guatemala. But you talk about, and we're quickly running out of time, so maybe we, because I have a couple more questions. You said the CIA was after you, too. Why would the CIA be after a reporter? I mean, the death squads were already there.
Well, the CIA was very, very anxious that the full story didn't get out. And I mean, God bless the CIA. They do a lot of good, but they also have, in the past, done some great harm. And so they didn't want the story out. They weren't necessarily going to kill me, but part of the time I was there, they were watching me, and I couldn't get away from them.
Well, one of the things that occurred to me, you were there 1983 to 1985, this horrendous slaughter is being carried out by the Guatemalan army, a massacre of civilians, incredible torture. I think if somebody would have said to me, Peter, you can go cover this in Guatemala, and I would say, great. And they say, but, you know, they've killed 150 journalists, and you'll probably be the subject of death squads. I got to say, I would say, I think I'm going to pass. Why did Mike Bond agree to go there? I mean, I've asked questions like this of war correspondents before, and I say it must take extreme courage, and, of course, they always say, no, that's not it. How about you? What made you go there under those circumstances?
Well, basically that it was happening and that it needed a voice. That all of these people... I'm always wanting to tell the story of the people who are voiceless, and here this enormous drama and tragedy happening, and I wanted to get the story out to the world because I thought maybe then it'll stop. And to a certain extent, yeah, I mean, writing about things and getting it in the paper, I was in many, many U.S. newspapers about Guatemala during this time, articles of mine, and it's all part of contributing to make a change. And also I had so many personal reasons. I mean, a good friend of mine who the book is dedicated to, as well as to my wife. The book is dedicated to my wife and also a very good friend named Dr. Jeanette Myra. And she walked out of an ice cream store one day with her two daughters in Guatemala City, and a black van pulled to a stop in front. Three guys threw her in the van. They drove 2 months, took her out two streets away, took her out of the van and cut her throat and left her dying in the street. And this used to happen 30, 50, 100 people a day. And they picked on teachers, doctors, nurses, anybody with an education, anybody who wanted to stop the slaughter. So I had a personal reason to bring this out too. And now, just one last thing.
Sure.
The dictator, the worst dictator of Guatemala, has recently been on trial now for human rights abuses, and will go back on trial again next year.
Well, let's hope that he gets the fate he deserves. My guest has been Mike Bond. His latest novel is The House of Jaguar. It involves a Vietnam War hero who gets shot down over the jungles with a plane load of marijuana and gets caught up in the Guatemalan Civil War, but it has something to say, very powerful, about U.S. foreign policy. You can go to Amazon and to Barnes & Noble. The book is an e-book on sale now for 99 cents. It's published by Mandevilla Press. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Mike Bond, I look forward to interviewing you about your next book, particularly the one about the 60s. Thanks for being with me.
Well, Peter, it's been an honor, and it's wonderful to be able to talk with what's the best word, a fellow soul. Anyway, I wish you the best. It's a wonderful program, and my best to everyone out there.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or sponsors of WRIF Radio or of its parent company, Greater Media Incorporated. Stay tuned. There's more rock coming right up on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. Night Call.
Hey listeners, Verizon stores are the only place to get your hands on the all-new HTC One M8. Buy one for just $199.99 and get a second one free. Click the banner now. For best results, choose Verizon. New to your activation required per phone. Upgrade early termination and other fees may apply.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Voting has begun in the 2014 Riff Rock Girl Search.
Get more details online at WRIF.com.
Take me.
myself in your defense. I'll try to see your twisted point of view. The jury and the judge already let the gavel fall. What is up? There's nothing I